All right, we'll go ahead and get started. We have a lot to cover. So the plan is, at a certain point, I'm going to dismiss the kids to go downstairs. We set up, it's a beautiful movie in the life of Elder Joseph the Hesychist. If you haven't seen it, it's incredible. So Nictaria and Sasha, that point, I'll have you guys. So, but it can't be like, in other words, like, don't hand the infants off to Sasha and Nictaria. They can handle it probably, but the point is, any kids that could be up here, kind of, they can go down there. They can sit still up here. Can also sit down there and watch the movie without, you know, needing like constant supervision, if that makes sense. The idea is that we're going to discuss more mature themes at that time. So toddlers are still fine up here, whatever, as they are now. And so that we can have an honest conversation about both. But I want the kids to hear the first part, if at all possible. So we've covered lots of things, and I'm going to move pretty quick so I can honor the time. First thing I'm going to say, and just say up front, is you must get this book. You must get this book. I'm not going to just say parent. Every Orthodox Christian needs to get this book. It's called Osnolenka, Orthodox Christian Parenting, Recipes for Raising Children. This is, quite simply, a book that's indispensable for Orthodox Christians, especially not for parents, but even for grandparents, or anybody trying to live a married life. How to prepare for this book. My wife was looking at it. We had a version from 10 years ago, and they reprinted it, and it's even better. Everything is a gem. This will teach you the Orthodox understanding of how we raise children, how we figure ourselves out, how we approach so many things. And it sums up kind of what Father Paul and I are trying to inculcate into you, the kind of patristic mindset. There's so many junky books out there. There's a proliferation of so many books. It's hard to know what's good and what's not. So I really encourage you to ask Father Paul and I, or read the books to give you in the list. You don't waste your time on junk. And so this book is fantastic. I mean, I don't know how we would have done it without this book as parents, honestly. So please, I'll see if we can get some copies. Order it online. You can get it. It's worth every penny. This book is from the beginning to end. I was just, as a priest, I was reading through different parts and was amazed. On the littlest things, the biggest things, how do you help your kids with their vanity? A number of things. I'm going to be skimming today. This book will give you all the tools you need to, in conjunction with the spiritual father, to make your kids make it. It's astoundingly beautiful. So, Orthodox Christian Parenting. It's printed by the Zoe Press. I'll send a link out again. This out by the monastery near Dunlap in California. So, I'll tell you what we're going to cover. A lot. So, the title of the email is nothing big. Just raising our children for holy marriage and monasticism, and Christian dignity, purity, courtship, dating, marriage, abortion, contraception, fertility treatments. No big deal. Just a few things. All these things could be a class in themselves, but I want to just give you a survey so hopefully you can know more and know the direction to look as Orthodox Christians, know that we do have an understanding of that. So again, towards the end, we'll dismiss the kids. And so here's the first thing I'm going to say. And again, some of this is speaking to parents, but a lot of it can parallel us as newcomers and newbies to the Orthodox faith. I have found that people who have no children have come to the classes on Orthodox parenting and have learned a lot because we're kind of infants when we're converting to Orthodoxy. And if, as parents, this needs to be in your kids, which means you really got to get it together. That's overall the biggest answer to this question is, how do you have holy children? St. Porphyria says, you have to become holy yourself. Wouldn't it be nice? This handbook's nice, but it's not going to do it for you. You can talk about this all day long. If you're a worldly, secular person who doesn't believe, they'll be just like you. And if you're a faithful person, they'll be just like you. And by the way, not just your kids, the parishioners' kids. My kids look up to you. The kids in the parish look up to each of you adults, even if you have no kids, Anna Fotini. You have no children, but my kids always are like love seeing you. And all each of you, I'm just picking on you, but you know, any of you, I could say, I'm thankful that we have a parish where, but the vast majority, I'd be quite happy. I mean, Johnny's not here, right? So, like, but that's part of the issue. I love you, Johnny. God bless you wherever you are. But you're not an example for my kids, which is part of the reason you shouldn't be here. Forgive my bluntness. I love them to pieces, but that's a problem, right? Our repentance can help everyone. Our sin affects a lot more than ourselves. Kids are looking up to us as adults, but especially as parents, grandparents, as mentors in many ways. So first thing, you got to start early. This book, what I love about this book, it starts talking about even before you get married. We'll talk about that in a little bit. With kids, start early. St. Paisis, by the age of 4, you better have your kids under control. Meaning what? That they're perfect? No. They make problems, but that they have a general understanding that when mama and papa say it, it's law. And if not, there's a consequence, and the consequence stinks so much such that they stop that behavior. How is this related to our topic today? You will have no kind of... Boy will become a man worthy of being a good husband It starts there. Who doesn't learn discipline and respect for his parents and basic things? And again, all those lessons come from the basis, the saints say, of respecting your parents, having obedience from a young age. Then you know how to honor a wife. You know how to honor a boss. You know how to work hard. You know how to... So it's very... It starts so early. So parents, it's not just for your kids to be good Christians, so they can be good in the monastery or in a good spouse. It doesn't start when they're 15, 20. No, it starts when they're young. If we start them young, they'll always understand that mentality of respect. So please, we talked before, a whole parenting thing, this book will help. Get it together. When you say no, it has to mean no. Right? Someone said to me, Father, it's going to be mean to them. If you don't spank them, the world's going to spank them. If you don't have some kind of stinky kind of consequence for them, they'll keep doing it. And it'll be different when they're 3 or 2 than when they're 16 and can get in major trouble. Major trouble. So please, do that work and work with Father Paul and myself to get a rhythm of prayer at home. Have a consequence chart on the fridge you all agree to. You know, have positive consequences, negative consequences, like just basic rules. If this happens, it's a spank. This happens, it's frustrations. This happened to read the Psalms. Whatever it is, we don't have time to go over it all again. But please have a family rhythm. When do you pray together? How do you pray together? When do you read the Bible together? Live it, swim in it, or all this is a waste of time. That's the prerequisite. So please talk to Father Paul and myself. If you don't have that together, be humble about it. And let us help you get a rhythm going in your home. It'll make all the difference in the world. You have to be all in. If you're not all in, for yourself, you won't change. And then those around you, especially the children, won't change. You know, it's because the kids won't make it. Brothers and sisters, I will tell you that, you know, I'm not an apocalyptic person, nor is anybody I know in the Orthodox Church, but it doesn't take much to see what's happening. And every holy elder and holy bishop that I know in the whole Orthodox world is saying right now, buckle up. Buckle up. Now, we don't, that maybe gets a pit in our stomach and go, oh, is that true? Is that, you know, is that being apocalyptic? I had someone tell me, Father, I'm not going to come to this class, I'm going to be apocalyptic. Well, what if it's true? Now, apocalyptic, I don't mean the end of the world's coming. I don't know when that is. God knows. And even these elders aren't saying that. But they are saying that life is getting more difficult. Life as we knew it as opulent Americans is going to come to an end. Pretty sure. No one knows when. No one knows how. Every country will experience it differently. But every holy elder and every saintly person I know, who I respect, who is not an alarmist, has said, it's time to get serious. It's time to get rid of those things that are worldly in your life and really round the wagons and figure yourself out. Make Christ your life. Now, by the way, we should always be living this way. Of course, right? Someone said, well, if this is really true, Father, then I guess I'll do it. But if it's not, just let me go on living a worldly life. What? Right? Like, the Christians always live this way. So I'm not saying live this way because of this, but there should be an extra motivation that I'm telling you things are going to get harder. Right? Look around you. Like, there's shootings everywhere. And there's, you know, last night I was reading it with Father John Mafuz, from a priest, from a holy bishop who said, you're going to see, we're going to see rumors of wars and earthquakes. And right as we were reading it together, do you know what happened? Earthquake. Father John's house last night. In California, there was 3 earthquakes in LA last night. Nothing bad, but shook it. And he went, wow. Okay. And we don't go, watch something else. You know, there was 700 lightning strikes at a single moment recently in California. And dry lightning strikes start all those fires. Worldly person says, oh, it's just coincidence. The Holy Fathers would say, God is speaking to us. Right? God is speaking to us to wake us up, to repent. So we're not like, oh no, fearful. That's not a Christian response. The response is sobriety. Like, this is going to happen. We know it's going to happen. Our Russians and Serbs and Romanians, they've been through it. They've been through bread lines. They've been through all that. May none of it happen. We prepare for the worst and hope for the best, but we don't care as Christians. But we're not frou-frou or fake or avoiding thinking about things out of fear. Christians didn't have fear. Early Christians shouldn't have fear. But a sober look at reality that the things we take for granted, if your happiness is bound up in your kids' piano lessons or you're going to the gym or having Dunkin' Donuts always open, there's a very good chance those things will not be around or available to you. People, our Orthodox people that are in the Congo, you know, they're not worried about earthquakes or anything else. You know what they're worried about? Food for the next day. Right, Samson and I were talking about, like, your hometown. No one's really concerned about that. Like, roof over the head, food, next day. That's how most people in the world live forever. We've become opulent. And what a blessing for us, this bishop said, for us to become real Christians now. So don't be afraid. If you're close to the church, you will be fine. If you're close, the church is your light, and you denude yourself of these worldly things, you will shine. But if you're worldly and if you're attached to those things, you will suffer. You'll be depressed. You'll be down. So I'm just telling you as it is. So these principles I'm giving you today have always been eternal principles. And they're constant in 2,000 years of the church, for sure. But they're more important than ever. Because we can't rely on the fact America's kind of a Christian country or kind of moral or normalcy. It will not continue. Right? The Holy Father said the things that we saw in the persecution in Russia will happen again. But it's not going to be better because things get worse as they go on. They don't get better. But Christ is still the same yesterday, today, and forever. So be sober about it, but be aware. Our kids have to be better than us. We can't say, well, Father, I did so and so and so and so, and they turned out fine. That's a recipe for disaster. First of all, you didn't turn out fine. Most likely, you're lying to yourself, right? I mean, we're here, we're alive, thank God. That doesn't mean like, well, I did it, so it should be fine. We'll talk about what I mean by that, right? I went to the prom and I was fine. Huh. We'll talk about the problem with a statement like that. Right? I did this. Oh, come on, Father. First of all, even if it happened to be so, we are not in the same times anymore at all. And we need to we'll talk more about that, but you don't lower the bar. Don't be afraid. People are so afraid. My kids are going to be weirdos. They're not going to have fun. No. If you don't protect your kids, they'll have a lot of fun in a worldly way, and they'll be a disaster and lose their souls and lose their minds. Not just their souls, their minds with the way the world is going. But if you keep them close to Christ, they'll be very joyful, normal, loving, like lights to other people. They're going to be adults very soon. Our children forget that. So we'll jump in. Purity. Why is purity important? Why do you think? Help me out. Why is purity important?
Those who are pure in heart will see God.
Yeah, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So being pure in heart and in body, by the way, they're connected, right? Being pure, it invites the grace of God, which we want. Okay, that's true. First of all, impurity is normal. Purity is a normal state of human beings, right? Before the fall, for sure. Even after the fall, there's a propensity towards sinning, but that was normal life. And societal norms were there knowing our weakness. So societal norms, laws, rules, police, they're all there because of fallenness of man, but they're there to put up walls to help us seek virtue and to avoid sin. Right, and avoid evil as much as possible. Otherwise, it wouldn't be necessary. As an aside, that's why it's crazy when people say, defund the police, get rid of all this. This idea that if you change the system, that human beings all of a sudden are unfallen is a disaster. And a recipe for, we know as sinners, we know who we are. We know the base human inclinations without normal society. Right? So that's important. Purity invites the grace of God. It's the best preparation for a beautiful adulthood. For a beautiful adulthood to be a monastic, or to be married, right? There's the two paths in the church. It's the same preparation of purity. And it brings true joy. And on the flip side, it avoids hell. When people lose their purity and they get involved in sin and lust, it doesn't just destroy their soul, it hurts them in every way. As a priest, I've heard seen so many tears of young people, older people. It destroys the soul like no other sin. The body too. No other soul wreaks havoc on the, no other sin, excuse me, on the soul than the sin of lack of purity and losing that beautiful gift from God. So how do you preserve purity in yourself, and but also in our children? What do you think? Give me some ideas. Come on. Come on. What?
Chastity.
Chastity, yeah. I mean, teaching it, right? I mean, talk about it. Right? You have to talk about it. You can't assume. In the old days, maybe society was a given. Right? Victorian society, I don't know, a number of societies. It was a given. It would be a scandal to see young people going off. It would be a scandal to see this kind of PDA, you know, public displays of affection. It was scandalous. There was real self-control. There was a sense of purity. There was things people looked at were they were careful. You know, in old Hollywood, you had to have the scripts had to be checked by Roman Catholic bishops. Did you know that? Yeah. They'd be checked by Roman, to make sure they weren't bad. Right? We're going to go beyond the pale, so to speak. So we have to talk about purity. It's a lot more than you think. Of course, it's physical purity, but it's purity of the mind, right? It's purity, and that's much more important. And purity of the heart. So here's the thing. Parents, are you pure? If you're not, you better work on it. Get in your confessions. What do you look at? What do you think about? What's in your house? I've gone to house blessings. I've looked around and seen a piece of art, and I go, oh, wow. Holy water's not going in that room. Why is that in your house? Get rid of that junk. Oh, it's fine art, Father. Well, that fine art can bring people to hell as well. Right? No one needs to see those things. Right? Right? Be careful with those things. You think it doesn't matter? You're wrong. Let me tell you as a confessor, you're wrong. Right? You know, you don't let kids have parents. You know what your kids can have posters of and what they can't. They really should have the saints in their walls and holy things. They have other things. Don't let them put up provocative, stupid, bad images, or you're blessing that, so to speak. Right? So what do you have up? What's on your screensaver? What do you watch? What do you listen to? Provocative things? They will follow you. You can say things all day long to you, blue in the face. They will follow you. So that's a big part of purity. We want them to control it. You better control it. What do you watch on TV, phone? You have to know everything they watch. Everything. And you have to approve of it. Is it taxing? Yes. If I know every book my kids read. My kids read voraciously. I make them check with me first. You might say, oh, this is like censorship. Yes, yes it is actually. Because I want to prepare their souls and nourish them with things that they get older, things they can handle. But all it takes, brothers and sisters, is one scandalous movie to ruin your kids and to open a floodgate of hell. All it takes is one inappropriate book, an appropriate song. You might think I'm wrong. I guarantee you I'm not wrong. So it might seem like, well, I never did that. And look what happened to you. Come on, let's be real. Right? If we want to start and make the best for our kids, it starts with ourselves and makes some sacrifice, right? And it goes on to like lots more things. Gluttony, are you a glutton? Gluttony and sexual impurity are closely related, the fathers say. So having a sense of fasting, self-control, temperance, and everything like that, they need to have it in our house, and we need to teach it to our kids. Your kids can fast more than you think. Ask the priest how they can fast. They need to work hard and do chores. They need to know that you talk about your body's a temple. Since they're young kids, your body's a temple. It's holy. We don't ruin it. We don't your virginity. No one touches you. There's private parts. They're private. They're holy. We veil ourselves. We're modest. All those things have to be said. And they're given in an Orthodox Christian family. But you have to make sure. Modesty. How do you dress? Do you dress scandalously and to be alluring? What a scandal if you're a married person, if you're a married man, and you dress in such a way that you want to elicit a thought even in another person's mind that's not your spouse that, wow, he's good looking. It's a sin. That's actually a sin. Because you should not be doing that. You should dress, and I tell my kids, neat and clean, such that people look at your face. They might say, it's a kind, what a nice person, what a humble person, but not other stuff. Same with women, right? If you're alluring, if you are looking to have someone approve of you, of how you look in a dress or a skirt or a pair of jeans, that's a problem. And if you do it, your kids will do it. And you'll answer to God for it. And it will destroy your marriage, by the way. We're talking about marriage more, but don't do that. Dress neat and clean. I'm not saying to wear a burqa, right? But I'm saying modesty. Modesty is important. There's certain things that only a spouse should see. I'm going to tell you really honestly. You know, one of the biggest things is it's totally inappropriate for Orthodox Christians. This is going to scandalize some people to wear a bikini, ladies. Absolutely inappropriate. It's like saying we're going to be really modest, but somehow on July 10th at the beach, those don't apply anymore. And all this part of your body that's reserved only in marriage for another person to see is out for everyone to see. And then you wonder why lust comes around. Right? Same with guys. So, you know what Orthodox Christians do? They wear modest swimwear. They don't show certain parts of their legs, their backside, all kinds of things. Show their belly and everything. You might say, Father, this is so old-fashioned. It is old-fashioned and it's beautiful. Because you know what's newfangled? Is a lot of sin and a lot of lust. Nothing is left to the imagination. Yoga pants, completely unacceptable for an Orthodox Christian. Completely. I mean, the church, thank God I've never seen it in the church. But at home, when you're sleeping, maybe okay, right? But the point is that people notice more than you think. And your kids watch every move you make. And they wonder why you do what you do all the time. Right? So if you're modest for yourself, no kids at all, be modest. Be humble. You'll be a light to everybody. Or you can be a scandal to other people, including your own kids. So help them. Because I'm in confession sometimes, and I'm talking to a kid in confession, and talking to them, and they'll say, you know, this, this, and that, where were you? And I was here, and all they saw was bikinis. All they saw was other stuff. And then they had to do it too, and they're embarrassed about their bodies. And they're like, that's unfair. It's really, you might say it's normal, but we're not trying to be normal by the world's messed up rules. So please, you know, you might say, this is a lot, Father. End result, saintly children who are lights to the world, worth every bit of this labor. I promise you. Essential rule I'm going to give you as a priest, no sleepovers. Did you hear me? No sleepovers. 99% of initial molestations take place at sleepovers. I used to work with sex offenders. It's terrible. And you might say, no, I trust these people. But you don't know their brother. You don't know their brother's friend is also sleeping over and all that. I have a rule in my family. No sleepovers. You can go to your friend's house, whatever. Even the old abbess, the monastery, said, sleepover culture is so weird. So when I was in Greece, we'd go to our friend's house. We're there maybe till whatever late. But we always came home and slept under our own icons. Right? It was weird. My generation was a big deal. Right? My wife and I were talking. Wherever she is, like, I can't believe my mom let me spend the night at this crazy people's houses. She had no idea what was going on there. The dad's a drunk. He's beating his wife. Who knows they're watching? She's like, I don't know how my parents ever allowed that. I had the same experience. I could go wherever I wanted. I saw things I had never seen before. Right? And I'm sure it was to my detriment. And thank God nothing bad ever happened to me that way. But I know a million people, friends, spiritual children, horrible things that have happened. So make it a rule. Protect purity. Just make it a rule. And your kids may be mad as heck. Let them be mad as heck. You'll save them from some really, really bad things. Here's a really, really important part. If you get one thing from all tonight, we have to stop this romance thing in young people. I cannot underline this enough. Enough with the Disney princess junk. No, it creates a lie. Do you know it creates a lie? And it creates a lie that the purpose of being a woman is just to find some prince charming. Not the purpose of an Orthodox Christian's life. Purpose of Orthodox Christian life is to love Jesus Christ, to love God, to serve others, and they might happen to be married or be a nun. For a guy, it isn't to look for some having some wife and all these kind of dreams. But people go, I see this, people go, Father, that's, come on, it's normal to get married. Is it, you know, you want him to be gay? No, it's not appropriate until the right time. But you know, our society's pushing it. Little girls think about, I'm going to get married. And okay, when they're little, okay, it's all theoretical. That's fine. But as kids get older, all the saints say, we need to check that mentality. I always have told my kids, don't think about that now. Every holy person has told my kids, don't think about that now. Just put it aside. It's not wrong. Start thinking, oh, that girl's pretty, that guy's... No, put it aside. And when it's time for that, God will bless that. If it's time for that, but there's no reason to think about that until you can operate. Until you're ready for action. But meaning to get married. We don't do anything in that realm until we're able to be in an actual relationship of marriage. We don't do it. That is so different in society right now. Would you agree? Everything's talking about it. And I hear it in the church even sometimes too. We should never allow for a second this idea of crushes. Oh, I have a crush on someone. Crush. It seems so harmless. Oh, when we were kids, everyone did it. And look how it all turned out. How many times were you adults, non-Orthodox, when you were young, non-Orthodox, were your hearts broken and ravaged? And the most important thing in your mind was these stupid things you look back on now and go, my heart was ravaged over such stupidity emotionally. Not necessary at all. But imagine saving your kids that heartache. Wouldn't it be great? Great. Oh, but I need a boyfriend and a girlfriend. We don't do that as Orthodox Christians. We don't do it. We don't talk about it. You know, Metropolitan Athanasius of Bishop Athanasius of Serbia, one time a priest from told me this. There's a young man, a seminarian, and he brought a girl up and he said, I want you to be my girlfriend. Right across the face. He says, what? He says, oh, I want you to meet my friend. Second slap. He's like, who is this woman exactly? So you're courting her? This woman is either your Christian friend or she is your fiance. Or she's your wife. We don't have this girlfriend nonsense. He's going to become a priest, so he could be tough. And he is tough. He slapped me all around when I visited him. In love. Put me in a headlock all around the monastery. In love. You know, but his point was clear is that we've bastardized relationships that are holy things, and it has to start young. You can't tell your kids when they're 16 or when they're 12 even, like, okay, these are the rules. They're already set in their minds that their hopes, what their hopes are. So it's not cute to have crushes, but you have to make sure, do you participate in that? You better stop it. Oh, isn't that so cute? They find that cute. Oh, isn't that boy? And I've seen, like, moms do this because they're raised like this. Or watch out for the non-Orthodox aunts and the grandma, like, oh, isn't that boy cute? And they're like, no. They're like, you're like 8. But that's normal for the fallen world. Maybe it was normal when you were a kid. We're trying to do better than that. And I'll tell you what, it's more damaging than you think. You plant seeds that are very, very difficult to uproot. Right? So don't do that. Just avoid it. Right? And you might say, well, what do the kids focus on? Love Christ. I tell my kids all the time, your purpose is to love Christ all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. Love the Mother of God. Love the saints. Try to be like one of them. Love your family, your friends around you. Work hard at your school lessons. Be a super hard worker with your chores. And then live that as a full life. The other stuff will come later. Just be a normal kid. Right? That's what I tell my kids constantly. That'll come in time. But our society wants to ram that down the throats of kids from a very young age, right? And for boys and girls, and it creates major problems in marriage later, weird expectations. So please, it creates the totally wrong focus. And I had a family once give me a hard time about this. 10 years ago I said this, and they were like, they don't come here anymore, and they were out of state. And they said, Father, this is so old-fashioned, this is too much for us, this is too much, too much. And then about 3 years ago they called me and said, in tears, said, we're so sorry. We were too proud to take this advice, and we kind of nurtured this kind of thing, and we didn't allow. And now, our daughter's run off. She wouldn't even know where she is. She won't even come home. She's off and around with guys, and our life is destroyed. Terrible, right? So it has a big effect, more than you might actually think. But what should the focus be? Like I said, a normal life around God. But if you don't have that focus, then they won't have that focus. Now, here's part of the problem too. They become obsessed. If you're not careful, they become obsessed with boys and girls and being married and Prince Charming and all these kind of things, which are just not healthy at all. Right? Tell your kids, there'll be a time for that. We're not going to think about that until it's time. For now, just be a kid and enjoy that. Right? Until you're ready for a relationship. Right? So I even tell kids in confession as they get older, like my girls' age and the shoebox girls and all the different age and all the boys that age, all as you start getting to a confessing age, right? Boys, we discuss everything, right? And a good kid, an orthodox kid that wants to be holy, confesses when he struggles with that, right? And how terrible if the kid knows in confession is confessing it, and then the parents, meanwhile, are feeding it without even knowing it, well-intentioned, but don't know it. Right, so I'm telling you now, protect their chastity, watch them, guard them, help them in this battle. It's much more important than you think. They have to swim in the church. And if they're not, they replace it with something else. It has to be real life. This book talks about, one priest says, there's the first life and there's the second life. He talks about how you see kids, they go to church, maybe they go to church school, you know, they follow Sunday school classes, and they show up and they light a candle and then do everything, but then They have their friends, which is the danger, and they're really careful in public school. They have their friends, and other things like that, this romanticism and all that. And next thing you know, the kid hits 15, 16, 17, and they leave the church. Or they make a big fall on their face, and they ruin their life. How'd that happen? And the priest says, it's because it was never their first life. It was the second life. The first life, what really mattered to them, was this other stuff became the content of their heart. The other stuff was kind of external, and then they put it aside. You see? This must be your first life. If your real first life is TV and worldly stuff and he's going to come here, that's your second life. It's a fake life. And they know it. Kids know it. And they sense hypocrisy. And they'll tell you to your face, why should I do that? You don't even do it. Ooh. Right? So it's a good motivation for us to really, we have to live pure and holy lives. From the youngest age, again, body's a temple, purity, chastity, virginity, which means, you know, guarding those places of our body, everything. These are great gifts. The father said the gift of virginity is so beautiful, of being pure, and our society mocks it. They mock kids that in public school that keep their purity. It's terrible. And public school spits on this. The idea of not touching yourself, the idea of not doing this kind of things, which we call purity, they see as an aberration. They want to fix that in your kids. I'll say more later, but it's disgusting. Your kids need holy examples. Because if all they watch on TV is, other than what I'm talking about now, they're going to go, well, Father Justin's saying this, and now my parents are saying this, but I don't like that. I like this show I watch. I like this girl in this show and this guy in this show and what she looks like and she looks like. And that's the first life for them because you've let it be. Right? That's the problem. They have to start to swim in this. They're in church a lot. They read the lives of the saints. You watch holy videos. You watch good things. They swim in it. You go visit the monastery. This becomes their life and the main content of their life, first life. It becomes their first life. When temptations come, they'll have that grounding, and they'll have holy examples in you, parents, in the priests, hopefully, and again, other people. I'm glad the people who aren't parents are here tonight. You're an example to every kid that comes in here, every new person that comes in here, every new catechumen. I said before, I would like to be able to take every catechumen family and say, you can go to, to pick any family and say, go to their house for dinner, and they can show you how to do prayers. Or I'd like a family that comes into the church with a bunch of kids and they're confused how to do this, to take any family in our parish and say, hey, go have dinner with them, show them how to have prayers, and show them how you discipline your kids and stuff. We need to work on that, right? So we can be examples and be lights. So it's important for us to really give them holy examples. They're not going to have many good ones. If you start young, they'll be fine. And as long as we start now, we'll be fine, really, because God is so merciful. He allowed me to get baptized when I was 20, right? He allowed all of us to make it some here. He's so merciful. We have to make the best of the time. Remember, don't think we're going to raise him just like I was. You want him to be much better than us. Very important, okay? What are some major things I want to... This goes hands in hand, again, we talked before, with discipline. Right? Being able to obey, being able to, you know, create a life rhythm, all that. You can talk, this can be great things I give you, but if you don't have a rhythm, how would you implement it? If your kids, I had someone tell me, Father, okay, I want to do this, but my kids, I tell them something, they just go, shut up. I said, well, we have a different problem there. Right? You can't let your kids say, shut up. Well, what am I going to do about it? Oh, you can do a lot about it. When they're 2, 3, 4, like when Gregory is Gregory, like what he does sometimes, once he tells a couple of times, right? Shut up, Mama. Oh, boy. He goes, I take him, I don't get angry, go, you never speak to your mother that way. And I swat him hard. He cries. And he has to say he's sorry. And it might happen numerous times. It stops because they start to do it and they go, consequence worse than the sin. I'll stop. And they're trained for life. That's how it works. But no one's trained anymore. And so, again, if you don't train them, you can't give them this gold. So you might say, oh, they just train them to stay at the table after dinner's over and not run around. Why is that important? Because you can have a meal in peace when they get older. More important, if they can listen to you there, they'll listen to you when they're struggling with these big sins, and they'll listen to the words you say. It'll have a really, really big effect. And that leads to my next, kind of skipping over a lot, but that's how we live. We watch them, we guard them, we protect them. We know what they're reading, listening to, who they're with. We guard them, right? They're going to confession, they're doing these things. And it's a beautiful life for kids. I've loved watching my kids grow up with all their struggles and their, and all that. My kids confess to me, which is unique. A lot of parents who are priests, dads who are priests don't have, but I have that blessing, and it's such a unique blessing. They tell me everything, and I'm so thankful to them for all their struggles, everything. I so wish I had been raised this way. I can't change the past, but I'm so thankful that we can do this for our children. We don't rob them of this blessing. So we do this, telling them, that'll wait till later. That'll wait till later. Now, do Orthodox date. Do Orthodox teens date? What's your answer? No stinking way. Now, people do it. Don't get me wrong. Are there Orthodox teens? Are there Orthodox Christians that date just like the world? Well, sure. Orthodox Christians do lots of stupid things. Right? But is that the best way to go? No. You know, I have people come to me and say, Father, hey, I don't even know them. They're baptized. Orthodox. I come and say, hey, we're going to get married next week. Will you do it? No. I don't even know you. I have no idea if you're ready to get married. Is this person Orthodox? I mean, no, that's how it happens oftentimes, right? And then what do you know? It turns to be a disaster often, right? Because they didn't prepare through Christ. So why don't we do the normal dating? Because we want to preserve holiness and purity. So here's the bottom line. It'll destroy their souls, right? Don't even think about it. And that's why it's important to have friends that are after the same things. Right? As the world gets crazier, having a close-knit community of people in the same mentality is important for our kids, because they're going to see maybe their worldly friends, and hopefully, you know what? We have friends in the world, but not too many. We don't need, you know, Elder Cleofa of Romania said that it's very important that our main friends, people that are striving for the same thing as us. That sounds judgmental, it sounds all this. Can you be friends with your Mormon neighbor? Yeah, to a certain extent, but not in the depth of your heart, because you fundamentally disagree about the most important thing in the whole world. That's going to limit the depth of that relationship, right? Right, you maybe can have a beer over the fence with him. And I said Mormon, yes. Which is fine. Maybe your Orthodox guy has a beer with, whatever. Or a cup of coffee with, whatever it might be. My point is, that's okay. We shouldn't be like, I can't talk to you in Orthodox. No, we have to have an outward orientation. We want to invite everybody to Orthodoxy, but we don't go and let our kids be totally dragged into a totally different way of living. Right, you train your kids, this way, do all this kind of stuff. They go to some friend's house who don't know about how they operate, and they confuse the heck out of them. Right? Or they go to non-Orthodox family. Be careful when you go to family get-together. All that kind of, watch what they listen to. And just help them process when they see something totally different. Not to judge it, but how do they approach that? Mama, you know, yeah, my kids ask me, Papa, how do I approach the situation? How do I talk about my faith? It's awesome to talk about those things. And a lot of times don't even talk about it. They just go, oh, whatever. Whatever. It doesn't really matter. It matters so huge. Them to know. When it comes to dating, who cares what people in the world do? Who cares what your cousin Sally does? Who cares what, you know, whatever so-and-so did? No, we don't do that. Right? You might put some tension. Like, well, my so-and-so in the neighborhood is my friend, and they go to, and he's going to the movies with some girl. Can I do that? Well, if you raise them right and talk about this stuff, they won't even ask that question. And if they do, they'll come and say, well, we don't really do that. Why? And they can talk to me as the priest, Father Paul, or you. But I imagine, and they're living in this world, they'll know why. Because it's not appropriate. Because what is it? What are two young people going on a date going to do? Nada. Nothing. Nothing good. Only going to cause a temptation. Friends are friends. A group of friends go out together, that's fine. Right? But the fathers say, boys should hang out with boys. Girls should hang out with girls. This idea that I have a friend of the opposite sex is a bunch of nonsense. Let me tell you right now, if there's any grown people in this parish who are married and have a friend of the opposite sex to hang out with, you're in the wrong. It's absolutely scandalous and sinful. The father said, we can have acquaintances. We can have people we kind of know, but it's not appropriate. I heard this one time. This couple said to me, I said, what are you doing tonight? Oh, and so-and-so. Oh, mom, the lady said, I'm going to go out for dinner with my friend. And I was like, who's your friend? Oh, it's just this guy she works with. Absolutely not. Oh, no, father, it's only up and up. His wife knows so-and-so. I don't care. Why would you take wood, put it together, and pour some gasoline on it and say, I hope it matches and hit it? Right? Orthodox Christians, that would be so scandalous in the old country. We wouldn't even do it. Right? But we push these envelopes, right? Your kids see that too, right? So no, we teach kids from a young age. You know, we can have friends. When kids are young, they all play like friends. When they get a little older, and they learn. Boys wrestle with boys. They don't wrestle with girls. It's not appropriate. You open the door for girls. You treat them with modesty. You treat them differently. They're not your friends in the same way. There's always tension. You have to always guard. The great saints say you always guard your chastity and you're aware of every relationship. The world loves to just throw all those things out and say it doesn't matter. It matters way more than you know. Okay? So please, we don't just date. Why? Because here's the thing. If they're obsessed with romance in the youngest age, first of all, they'll never even consider being a monastic. Ever. Ever. The Orthodox Christian families raise families and say, your goal, kids, is to be a saint and to love God and to be joyful and to work hard and to live for others. It's a beautiful life. And then when you get to be a certain age, you pray. And that assumes they're visiting monasteries, the part of our life which we need to do more as Orthodox Christians. We have to go out of our way more than the old country. There's less monasteries, but they're around. And then kids can weigh and they can see and they can say, which am I called to? But if a kid is obsessed with this reality they've already thought of, well, monastic life, I can't get married. I can't have a pretty dress then. I can't do all that. How many saints in the walls would we not have if that's how they were raised? A lot. And by the way, there's no coincidence. If you look in the lives of the saints, there's more monastic saints than there are married saints. Right? There's both. But the monastic is like the spiritual warriors. We say without a doubt, it's the highest calling. Now, it's not everyone's calling, and everyone's called to a new... But there's a special forces. I don't feel like less of a person because I'm not a monk. I wasn't called to that. But I can bow in reverence to those monks and nuns who, when we're sleeping, they're praying. And why would you want to devoid your kids the possibility to join their ranks? You're robbing them. You're robbing God. You're robbing the world of prayer warriors. You're robbing yourself and them of what maybe that's their true happiness. And because it makes you feel uncomfortable, you never thought about it, or you've raised them in a way, they miss that blessing. You know, the rule in my house is my kids have to be close to the monasteries. And the bottom line is, preparation to be married, preparation to be a monk or a nun, is what? It's exactly the same. Right? Right? If you're going to be a monk, you have to be hardworking. You have to learn to get up in the morning and pray, make your bed, be a man, to work hard, pull your weight, have self-control, do all those things. That's what a married man needs. Same with a woman, right? He needs to be able to to take care of her family, right? And this is not very PC, but to cook and to clean and take care of her home and to take care of things. When you go to the monastery, my girls, they get up early. They learn discipline. They work hard. That's the great thing with the monks. You learn how to be a good human being. I might tell my kids, swim in that. See if you're called to the monastic life first, because it is the highest life. And if you're not, no problem. Then with God's help, we pray and God will find you the spouse that's for you, that's going to lead you to the kingdom of heaven. Does that make sense? Totally different than the way you and I were raised, probably. But totally beautiful. So beautiful. And it will save so much heartache and actually equal so much holiness. So we use this, first of all, that's the best reason. They won't consider monasticism. Second, they'll be obsessed. Remember that age when the most important thing became your friends? How many remember that? Raise your hand. And there's an age where all of a sudden your friends, most important, you didn't give a heck about your parents. That breaks my heart. You know what? I don't have it with my kids. I love being with my kids. When I was in the old country visiting some places, I saw on a Friday night teenagers hanging out with their parents and grandparents because they wanted to be with them. And it's public school, the society, the TV that creates this world where forget my parents, forget the church, forget the, just my friends. It's so sick, and it's not been part of the church or any society until recently. So don't allow it. Don't allow your kids' hearts to be taken away from God and the church and all that. No, this is their life. And if they have friends in that, it'll be even easier. This is their life. And it can get more so with not just friends, but kids of the other sex and like temptations for relationships and all those kind of things get drawn in. Right? And that's it. It becomes their focus. And then when a person loses their focus on God, it's very hard to get it back. Usually only through suffering does a person come back. So what's the difference between courtship and dating as an Orthodox Christian? We only court for one reason. What is it? To get married. Right? There's no other reason. Right? There's no other reason. Right? I want to have fun. We don't do that, actually. We don't do that. We don't pill around. Right? We say, I'm praying. I'm at an age where I'm able to get married. And so I'm going to get to know someone ready to be married. Period. Otherwise, tons of temptation. Tons of... The Holy Fathers all say this. And by the way, the Holy Fathers weren't like flying on air with no temptations. They knew temptations well, which is why they understood this and said to do this. They knew that people are people. And to ask young people to put themselves in places of temptation and not expect anything to happen is stupid. So why do it? Let's prepare them and let's keep them holy, right? So let's say you get older and you decide, okay, I want to get married. So let's bring up a side issue real fast, an important side issue. What are we going to be when we grow up? How are you going to help your kids with that question? That's an important question. You know, when they're little, I'm going to be an astronaut, right? I'm going to be a firefighter, right? Okay, whatever, when they're young. But you reach a certain age, now you need to ask yourself, especially now more than ever, but always, for Orthodox Christians, what does that look like? Are they going to go to college? I wonder if going to college is really an essential thing. I would argue not essential at all anymore. For a very few trades, a very few things that you should be called to. But you know what college is? Hell. College, for people trying to be Christians now, is hell. It was hard enough when I was in college, but it was possible. Now, again, I hear confessions. I used to travel to Orthodox young people things and hear confessions. It is almost universally a disaster. I'm not telling your kids to be idiots. I'm not saying that maybe there's other options. My point is, don't just jump to, I went to college and look how I turned out. Don't do that. Right? I went to college and I have lots of college debt. I'm thankful for it. But looking back, you know, all my friends who didn't go to college, who went to like trade school or they're plumbers or they're carpenters, they're making plenty of money. They have, with their family, they start families young. They have normal blue-collar lives and they're truly happy. And I have friends who weren't Christians who went on degree. You know, would you like fries with that? You see what I mean? Like, they can't get a job. They have a million degrees. They've been in school till they're 30. Now they're trying to get married. Now that it's so unnatural. But a society has said, what do? You go to college. High school, college. Doesn't you need to ask that question. It's another issue we'll talk about as a parish, but I wouldn't push that at all. I would say, what is the purpose? The purpose is to save your soul. College, I'm telling you, most kids nowadays are losing their soul, their purity, their chastity. And the gain, it's all online right now. Harvard's $40,000 a year. It's all online. Come on. What was that line from Good Will Hunting? Like, a college education, you paid $100,000 for it. I could have gotten for 5 cents at the public library or something. There's a lot of truth to that, brothers and sisters. Our purpose is to create saintly people and saintly families and holy communities. And what's wrong with our kids being blue collar? What's wrong with our kids having a job and having a small house and being contented? That's so much better than if they go to Harvard or they go to this, get the scholarship, and they become a doctor. You know, talk to most doctors. They're miserable. Most Orthodox doctors, I know they're amazing, but they're miserable. They have to go to school till they're like 30. That's unheard of in the old days. And then they have a specialty, and they're so busy, and by the time they're sort of family, they're 30, 40 years old. Right? Most women are the most fertile when they're in their 20s, early 20s. Right? That's true. And it becomes a heartache. Maybe they never get married, and they miss so much in their life. Why? Okay, maybe they're called to be doctors, and they're doing good work, but they missed out on real life. Fellowship, sacrifice, love, family, for the sake of this idol, which was not their fault. It was told to them by the society. So please, girls versus boys, different question, right? This is not very PC, but I don't care. The norm, Orthodox Christian norm, is for the dad to work and the mom to stay home and take care of the children. Now, are there exceptions to that? Of course, there's exceptions here and there. No one's judging that. But we have to strive for the norm. I'm telling you, when the mom can stay home and the dad can work, it gives the dad a sense of, he's the man of the house, he should provide, he should take care of business. That's his natural role given by God. And his wife should be the one to be to tend the children, to take care of them, to help. They do it together. And of course, there's always times, there's exceptions. I'm not saying there's not, but we don't call the exception the rule. I was very proud of Reader Andrew, if not he's still here. Reader Andrew and Mary. Andrew waited and prayed and prayed and would maybe become a monk and going to get married. And he didn't settle and he waited and God sent him a great gift. an equally pure gift in his wife Mary. It's so beautiful when people do it the right way. And it's been very blessed for them, even though they're struggling now, their baby's in the hospital, but they're going to make it. And you know what she said? I just want to be a mom. Is that okay? She said, I'm getting pressure. You know, pressure from who? Tell them to take a hike. You're made to be a mom. You're married. And she can make great money. She's smart, talented. She said, I want to live humbly, and I want to just take care of my children and raise a holy family. Is that okay? She has to ask if it's okay. That's how bad things have gone. To live the most normal way that women have lived for all the world's history, and you have to ask if it's okay. That's how bad things have gotten. Of course it's okay. It's beautiful. It's normal. It's the best. So when we're raising our girls, we need to ask them, what are we raising them to be? Okay, maybe because guys are such idiots nowadays, girls might have to learn a way to make money. That's true. Unfortunately, there's not many good guys out there. There are some, but not as many. So maybe you have to learn certain skills they can take into the monastery or take into to support themselves until they get married or help their marriage, whatever it may be. But maybe think about that more. But in general, women have to teach their daughters, how do you take care of things? How do you sew? How do you do those kind of things? How do you put a button on a shirt? How do you run a family? How do you run a household? How do you run meals? How do you clean? All these things. They're not natural. My wife and I got married, and she was just like, how do I do this? I was a better cook than her when we first got married. My mom taught me as a chef, and I hated it as a kid. I was glad. But now she's way better than me, and she's learned how to do all those things on the fly. But talk to someone like Stella. You know Stella? She's Romanian. That girl can, woman, can clean anything, can fix anything, get everything. Where'd she learn it? My mom taught me. My grandma taught me. That's the way it was in the old days. We need the old ways. Because I want my daughters to be worthy of being married to a really wonderful Orthodox man. I want a great Orthodox man to come along who's pious, who loves God, who's pure, who's hardworking, who can supply for them, who can take care of them in danger. In the same way I could. I'm not letting any of my daughters, if they're not called to Manasseh, they're called to marriage, I'm not going to let a single one of them be taken by a guy who can't take care of them as well as I can or better. Not going to happen. Right? So you find a guy, but she has to be worthy of that. Pious. Hardworking. Ready to honor his skills and offering with to take care of him. That's the old ways, and it's absolutely beautiful. So, you know, math's important. That's important. That's important. Calculus is important. Okay. But learning how to take care of people, how to be responsible, how to make your bed, how to manage your emotions. Right? How to manage your emotions. If you want your girls to have a good relationship, don't be a nutcase yourself, moms. Right? It's true, right? If moms can't control their emotions and can't relate well to their husbands, that's why you have your spiritual father to help you and your kids watch you. If they learn that, they learn how to be calm, how to control their emotions. They get older through, you know, hormones and all this kind of stuff. They learn all that, right? Young men, teach your boys to be men, to work hard, to have chores. I don't know about if you do allowance, you shouldn't do allowance. They should do those chores because they love God and they love you. And it's their honor to do it. The same way it'll be their honor to do it for their family or the monastery when they get older. Create that feeling of hard work and they'll be great men. It starts even when they're very, very, very little. So, a man has to go to college? No. Maybe he should go to trade school. Maybe he should learn how to be a plumber, this and that, a priest, a deacon, whatever it may be. But think of those choices and prepare yourself, parents, that offer those before them. Because your other relatives aren't. They're going to give them this worldly idea of success. Let's show them other ways. Let's show them other ways, and I think it'll be very, very important. They can take it. And as the world gets crazier, this is important. Hands. Every elder I've talked to says, the world gets crazy, if the economy goes crazy, no one cares if you have an MBA or a PhD in this economics. Can you take a hammer and build a house? Can you run plumbing? Can you build something? Can you be what a man has always been? Those are going to be skills that will be life-saving for the community, for other people. So we need to engender this in our kids to be true men and our women, girls to be true women. In addition to all the skills they might need according to their situation. So why is that related? Because we're trying to create marriage material here. Married to Christ and holy monasticism, so they're ready. Because if our boys and girls had to go to the monastery, you don't want them to go as losers, right? If they go as like messed up young people, they're not offering anything to the monastery. I want my kids to go and say, they've learned hard work, they're going to be the ones to cook and clean. They can take care of the older monks or nuns over there. They can sacrifice, they can love, they can train the next generation. Same with marriage, right? We want to create marriage material, whole people. We need the old ways. So what's that process look like? First of all, our spiritual father has to be huge in that whole process. The parents, in conjunction with the spiritual father, are guided. And that's a given. As they're growing up, that's a given in their life. It's so beautiful. And then as they're getting older and they're praying, they're talking to their priest, their parents, what's the desire of our hearts? And they manage all those things like what's flaky, what's real, what's not. And they start saying, how can I make a difference in the world? When your kids ask what to do when they grow up, tell them this. You can do whatever you want as long as you stay close to Christ, and that your reasons for doing it is because you want to help. You want to serve God and or other people. But if it's a selfish profession, don't do it. Right? Kids, they want to be a lawyer. No kid wants to be a lawyer because he knows what being a lawyer is. Why does a kid want to be a lawyer? Tell me why. What?
They watch Perry Mason.
Perry Mason, you watch Perry Mason. Right? I watch Perry Mason, but they don't know who that is anymore. Right? But your point is simply put, they watched it, an idea. Or they want money. Lawyers make money. They have stature. They want to be doctors. You know how many kids want to be doctors? I find out when I do confessions, even college kids going to medical school, they have no idea what they're getting into, but they want to be doctors because they make a lot of money and you have prestige. Ego, ego, ego. Tell your kids whatever they want to do, but don't do it because of ego. Do it because God is calling you. That's the best way you can serve God and other people. That clarifies things. Now, don't tell them that when they're five. No, this is, you can't be a spaceman. You need to be responsible. No, of course. Whatever. Right? But you know, I'm talking when they get that, when they get a little older and they're thinking of their hearts, because they create those things early. Since I was in fifth grade, I knew I wanted to go to college. I wanted to go to Ivy League college. I'm obsessed with my ego. And all. I had them all mapped out. I applied to 21 colleges. I was obsessive. I wish someone had slapped me in the face way young and been like, doesn't matter. Then you finish college and you laugh and go, well, that was stupid. Right? I mean, it was necessary, but you worry about something that's like 4 years of your life, right? So, really, very important. Are your kids called to be monastic? How will they know that unless you visit monasteries? Visit monasteries, visit monasteries. Ask Father Paul and I, we'll set it up. Tikhon, are you here? Cody? Is he working today? I think he's working today. Newly illumined Tikhon. Cody Thornton, he's been baptized recently. He wants to go to the monastery. Where's he going to go? He's going to go to the Skeeton, New Mexico. For his. He has a vacation for 6 days. He's going for 6 days. Families, you can go down there. I'll find a place. We'll help you go visit. Make the effort. Don't go to Disneyland. Go to the monastery. Right? It'll really, it gives your kids these holy figures. Your kids will go, I don't want to get up and do my prayers, but I saw Father Silouan get up at 4 a.m. I want to do prayers like him. They should look at you getting up too, right? But it gives them holy examples of heroes in the spiritual life. Very, very important. And if they're called to that, you're so blessed to have monastics. You could be not, in all country, in Russia, in Greece, every family, large families, offered one or two of their children, very, if not more, became monastics. I know a priest. I met a priest in Greece. He has eight children. Every single one of his kids are monastics. And he goes, I'm the happiest guy in the world. He says, no grandkids. I'm a spiritual grandkids. Now, the odds are low. That's going to happen, right? But the point is, we could be so blessed. Right now, we have how many in our parish? Two. Three, actually. One, long before you guys came here, there was a lady named Tatiana Golub. How many of you remember Tatiana? You do. And their youngest daughter has been a nun since she was 15. She went to the monastery. 14, 15. Remember Tatiana's youngest daughter, very little? And now she's been a nun for 20 years. 20 years. The monastery in California, so that's our first. And then Catherine's daughter, Sister Miriam, been there 5 years, the monastery. And Justina, Joe and Melissa's daughter. How many years has she been there now? 3 years now. And she went when she was 17. And it was a glove to hand. Glove to hand. Perfect fit. Happy. And they're all so happy. It's unbelievable. A lot happier than most people their age. Let me tell you that. So it's a beautiful life. Like if you learn nothing more today, then your kids should think about monasticism. You've gained something from this talk about your own life and the importance of it. So if they're not called to monasticism, they've learned being around that. And now marriage. And they start asking themselves with their spiritual father, how mature are you? What's your next step? What are you going to do for the next couple of years? That's talked about. Maybe you're going to stay home and get a job. Maybe you're going to work at home. Maybe you're going to take care of the kids. Maybe you're going to learn a trade. Maybe you're going to go study a language. Just always careful. Maybe you're going to visit a monastery for a while. Maybe you're going to learn this skill, whatever it is. Boys and girls differently. And then when the time is right, when a young man has the education or has the job skills and he's making money and he can support a family, that young man is ready to get married. Not before. None of this like, well, I'm not sure what I'm doing when I grow up and I have no place to live, but hey, babe, let's get married and live in mom's basement and have no money. Nope, I would never bless it ever as a priest or a dad, ever, ever. Right? Or a woman who wants to be married, she's like 17 or 18, but she's like 8 years old in maturity. She's not ready to be married. No matter how great the guy is, he has money and he takes care of you, and he's pious. That person's not mature enough, ready? So it's a matter of discernment with the parents, with the spiritual father, a number of things, and to launch them into that next life. It's a difficult time, but if done in the life of the church. As an aside, we'll talk about another thing later that I'm going to skip there. So only marry Orthodox person. Let me repeat that. Your kids, you should only marry an Orthodox person. Does that sound close-minded to you? It is. And it should be. Right? Because we're not open-minded. Open-minded when it comes to what we're going to have for dinner tonight. That's fine. But we're not open-minded when it's like, who am I going to choose to spend my life with? Who's going to be the best person to help me to prepare for eternity? To help me on this path to eternity, to launch into eternity paradise. If they're not Orthodox, disaster from the get-go. Right? From the get-go. And again, if you teach them from a young age that, oh, she's pretty, and there's a focus on that, she's pretty, she's all that, or he's got lots of money, we focus on materialism, all that, they'll be foggy. They won't see correctly. They won't have good criteria for picking a spouse. If you show them, no, it's a given. You marry someone Orthodox. Are there exceptions to that? Yes. There are exceptions, but the exception is not the rule. I'll tell you, that's 1 out of 100. Right? You know, I know plenty of people that can tell you it doesn't always work. Right? Right? It doesn't always work. I know plenty of people. They have great experience. A person might even get baptized. They become baptized, and they're going to get baptized because they want to marry this person, not because they fall in love with Jesus Christ. Now, are there exceptions? Yes. Don't let that be the way. If you raise your kids saying, I'm going to look for someone this way, they won't even allow their hearts, they would guard their hearts so as not to allow their heart to be taken by someone who's not going to be a fit candidate. Guarding the heart. Faithful Orthodox. Your purpose is paradise. Marriage is for holiness, happiness second. Holiness. You know, it's always been the case, but now more than ever, as the world's going to go the way it's going to go, there's going to be less and less room, wiggle room, for marriages that are about luxury. Or about just like, you know, why are you getting married? Well, because it's going to be so pretty. You're going to have a nice dress and a nice wedding. And he's so cute. And we're going to get to hold hands and kiss and stuff. And it's going to be so neat. And we're going to get this house. And those are like accoutrements on marriage, but not the reason you get married. In the modern world, that's the reason. Like sexuality and all those other things. And that has nothing to do with an Orthodox Christian understanding of marriage. I'm marrying this person because this person is truly the person that can help me, that's the best I've seen, that can help me to become a better person and in Christ. And I can raise a family. This person can go through the hard times with me, and we're going to make it to paradise together in this short life. Totally different understanding, right? So, courtship takes place only with the blessing of parents. There's no, you don't run around on the side in the Orthodox way. You get a blessing from your parents. You get a blessing from your spiritual father, right? People probably go, hey, Father, I want to get married. I'm thinking about this girl, she's Orthodox. What do you think about me talking to her? And I'll say, are you kidding me? You can't even take care. You can't even tie your shoes, buddy. Right? I'll tell guys, take 6 months and actually do your prayers every morning and night and stop looking at stuff on the internet and then we'll talk. I wouldn't dare unleash you on any Orthodox woman that I cared about. That's the beauty of the church. It saved people, right? You can be sure that if I meet some guy who wants to marry one of my daughters, I will go right to that spiritual father and go, psycho, tell me now. I'll check, do they have, they can't tell me their confessions, but they can tell me, like, is this person going to be, and they'll tell me, yes. And priests talk like this all the time. All the time. To say this is a good way. A good way to find a spouse, by the way, is, you know, find one in Orthodox circles in your own area, is talk to other priests and say, hey, do you have any good Orthodox women that are good wives? And that's how things happen all the time. Many, many marriages happen that way. It's a normal way, unlike stupid online dating and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, it's very important. Courtship is not physical. This is really important. Courtship, the whole beauty of it is it's a guarding of the heart. We have to teach our kids. So I always do this with young people. There's no love at first sight in Orthodoxy. No, no, no. You might say, oh, I noticed that person, and they were nice looking. Okay. But I always do this thing when I talk to young people, college students, I give retreats, I say, there you are. You're in Starbucks. And your eyes meet. You know, your eyes meet, his eyes meet, sparks fly, you're in love. Wow. And he could be an axe murderer. You know nothing about that person, their soul, anything. All you know is that thing that they're portraying out, which often is not the real person inside. It's a shell. It's a mask. You know nothing about them. But people fall into relationships that way. Someone comes up and goes, hey, you want to go out? Yeah. And they have such low self-esteem, they think, they like me, I must like them. People get married like that. I'm serious. That's how things begin often. They fall into relationships because of lust or like a mutual attraction or, you know, I love you. You know, I love usually means I love me and want you. Right? Many, many young people. You know, so we don't do that. And we teach our boys and girls, when you see it, notice a person is attractive, you avert your eyes. And you say, okay, that person's beautiful, but I'm not going to let my eyes be taken by that. Like, the person's never going to let it go to lust. You're going to control your, and you're going to say, okay, and a person who's looking to get married, I always tell them, avert your eyes. You know, see the beauty in them, but never let it go to a place of lust. Keep it beautiful, and then temperate, calm. Just because they're nice, and they might like you, and they're good looking, they're not your soulmate. Right? You don't even know them yet. And maybe with the blessing of the priest, say, okay, maybe this person's a good person. Maybe, yeah, we're going to get a cup of coffee. But there's no holding hands right away. There's no, that's saved. Because, and there's no physicality to it, because they go out, they spend time. You know what often happens? They go, Father, you know what? This wasn't for me. You know, I didn't really connect with him. And at most, it's what? A little sad? A little disappointing, right? But you know, the difference in the world with relationships, people fall into them, and there's an emotional attachment, and they've had physical interactions, and their hearts are a mess, and then they realize the same thing. Now, to extricate from that is much harder, and there's trauma. Whereas an Orthodox is, you know, okay. And you can court numerous, not at once, but you can court people and say, you know, you look and you're discerning, is this person going to... And maybe there's some disappointment, oh, I thought it was going to be, but no, there's sadness and tears maybe, but even not that usually. But then you wait and then you save that stuff for later. So different than the way we were raised. But that's the Orthodox way, and it's very, very beautiful. Guarding the heart, pure, chaste, you know, and to see if they're capable of being together. Spend time at a coffee shop, do things in groups, never sleep in the same area, all this kind of thing. We keep those things. They spend time, they talk, they write letters, they do all this. My wife and I remember our courtship was a beautiful time. Right? We got to know each other. Maybe she wrote me a little thing in my mailbox at the college campus and things like that. She wrote me a poem. I remember that. Right? And once I had the blessing of my priest, then I was very romantic. I'm very romantic, actually. Guys, any tips? I'm actually good at that. It drives me crazy when guys are bad at it. I go, oh my gosh, don't be such a loser. It's not that hard. They just want to be loved. That's all. And it doesn't even matter. They just want to be made to feel special. It's not hard. You know? And then with a blessing, when you know... I knew that she was Orthodox. I got the blessing from my priest. We talked a little bit. She knew our first date. We talked about, I want to be a priest. I told her. And I said, I want to have 13 kids. And she was like, whatever. Honey. We have 9 kids now, right? You know? That was on our first date. In Orthodox way, I laid it out and said, "This, if you're interested in me, this is where I'm going." And you know what? Women like that. They want a man who knows where he's going to the kingdom of God, and he has a plan, and he wants to invite a young woman to go on the journey of life. She doesn't want to be the journey. She knows she's not the journey. Christ is the journey. She wants to join a man who's responsible, knows where he's going, knows what he wants, and wants her to join that. That's the most romantic thing in the world, in the life in Christ. It's beautiful. And vice versa. Right? It's very, very beautiful. So if we do it in this way, it creates such beauty. People think this is like spirit quenching and romance quenching. It actually is the most romantic. It's not bastardized with all the world. Most people don't even know this simplicity anymore. I remember going with my wife onto a date. I remember it was a big deal. I took her to the door, whatever, and then I kissed her on the forehead. That's more romantic than all the other stupid stuff that people do in the world. Right? This is the Orthodox way. It's classy. It's true love of God, of purity, chastity, and it's so much more breathtakingly beautiful. I want you to imbibe this into your children, and that this is a process that happens, and it's very, very beautiful. This is essential. It'll save so much heartache. There is no soulmate in the Orthodox Church. I'm so thankful for my wife. God gave her to me as a gift. But we don't have this illusion that, like, the stars are aligned, and there's that one special someone. God, am I going to find them? That's not an Orthodox. It's not a Christian mentality. Any two Orthodox Christians can make it. Do you know that? The Father said that. Any two. And by the way, even if you were soulmates, if you aren't joined in Christ and work your tail off, you'll never make it. But two people that are very disparate situations, they're different. So, but they're both humble, and they love God, and they want the kingdom. They can make a beautiful marriage. In the old days, marriages were arranged. Remember that? Marriages were, I know old Greek couples who were introduced the day before they got married. And they were married for 60 years. And the people that choose whoever they want, and they're divorced 3 times. Interesting, right? Because there was a dedication to the institution, to the life, to the joy of it. Not based on like my fickle emotions. I'm dedicated to this whole life. It's very, very beautiful. So don't think that, you know. And how do we find out You know, how do we find out that we're attracted to someone, right? There's mutual attraction. They have to be, you know, but that doesn't matter as much as you think, actually, the Holy Father is saying. And it's just true. The man must provide, right? We're all about young marriage in the Orthodox Church, but not immature marriage. You get it? There are some people in their 20s. I know an Orthodox Christian couple. They're 18. 18, just married. Super impressive. The guy I learned got his degree. I think he's a carpenter and he's a builder. And she's a wonderful gal, and she's going to stay home, and they're going to have kids, and they have a nice little house. They go to the Orthodox Church. So mature, so ready. And you go, it's lovely. It's absolutely lovely. And I've been able to go to the monastery at 15, 16, 17, 18. Lovely. I know guys who are 50 who are nowhere near ready to get married. The 18-year-old is, they're way more mature. Does that make sense? So not young marriage per se. It's immature marriage we don't want. Right? It's very, very important. So, my grandma used to always tell people, don't get married till you're 30. Don't do that. You know what I mean? Like, if people live their lives according to that. Right? Don't listen to things like that. Get married when God is calling you to do that, if you are. Okay? I know that sounds shocking. Someone told me, I was talking to a priest, he goes, if I told my parents that you were okay with 18-year-olds getting married, I'd say you're crazy. I said, what kind of 18-year-olds are you talking about? 18-year-olds that can't make their beds and pick their noses? They're not ready, that's for sure. But that needn't be the case. George Washington was 16 years old when he was like, I think he was the Surveyor General of all of Virginia. 16. The youngest captain of a ship in the British naval fleet was 16 years old. And now we ask a 16-year-old to make his bed. It's pathetic. Look at Panteleimon. Stand up, Panteleimon. These boys, Panteleimon has grown how much recently? Panteleimon's as tall as a grown man. How old are you now? You're 12. You could do the work of a man easily. Sit down. And you're 16, you'll be as strong as an ox. And you should be doing good, hard things. Hard things, like manly things. And we expect so little from our men and women, and then wonder why they can't be mature. I dare say if we raise them, one of the beauties of homeschooling and other things, or pushing them in this Orthodox way, is they can develop skills so young. By the way, teenager is an adolescent, is a modern term. You know that? In the old, every old country, you go from being a kid to being what? An adult. And there's a rite of passage, right? In Indian culture, you have to go out and kill an animal and spend all night and nothing. It's harsh. It's a rite of passage in different tribes. Women were the same way. But here's the problem. We raise kids like kids. We coddle them. And then we give them this stupid thing called adolescence, which is made up, and say, oh, they just can't do anything. They just need to, like, you know, be a ball of hormones or whatever. And then we expect them to be adults all of a sudden. It's unfair. We should raise them as children, training them, helping them, having rite of passage, teach men to be men, do hard things, to suffer, to be ready, to be worthy of suffering for a family. If a man can't suffer physically, how's he going to be a dad? Right? Andrew has no idea what he's in for. His baby's in the NICU right now. When his baby comes home, real life begins. Crying, up all night, physical lack of sleep, and this guy loves sleep. And he married a woman who loves it just as much as him. And he's going to love her by letting her sleep while he takes care. Right? But it is physical. And if you haven't tested your body through physical struggle, like going to the monastery and learn how to get up at 2 in the morning, you can get up at 2 in the morning and change a diaper. You can do it. The Orthodox life is so rich and real and beautiful, but it starts young. It starts young, and there's a good reason for that. Then you have your whole life to do very, very beautiful things. So it's an old school way of doing things, right? Of course, you get married in the church. That's obvious. We get married and joined by God. You need a good plan. You must be ready for children. We'll talk more about this a little bit later, but the Holy Father said, without a doubt, every great priest I've talked to says this. If you are ready to get married, you're ready to have children. If you're not ready to have children, you are not able to get married. Read the, I don't have time for you. I printed it out. I don't want to take more time, but if you read the marriage service of the Orthodox Church, what does it say? Children, 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 children. May their children be like young olive shoots round about thy table, right? May they be, I mean, go forth and multiply, all these kind of, it's blessing you to have children. You go, well, not really, God, not right now. It's not really in the plan. So I'm going to let you know how that works. That's unheard of. Another generation. We'll talk more about that in a little bit, but it's very important. Have as many children as God gives you as a gift. Very quick aside, what is the Orthodox view of abortion? I'm going to let the kids go in a second, but I want to talk about, what's the view of abortion? It's murder. It absolutely is murder. In every case?
Yes.
Every case. Okay. So I think most people know abortion is what? It's when a mother has a baby in her womb, and at any age, from the day of conception, right, to the 9 months, and by any means, a purposeful way of ending that life in the womb. That's abortion, right? You're aborting, you're killing that life. It's a sin every time. Okay, I think it's easy in certain situations. We know that, because how do we know that? It's amazing. Most people can't think this way. I remember being a young person in New York City, New York, where I grew up, New York State, and it was ran into my mind in public school that pro-choice. And you know what? I was. I don't understand how I was. I really look back and go, how was I? I was under the spell. And the spell was, nothing is more important than someone's freedom. Don't ruin someone's chance for a great life. Freedom. Don't hassle somebody. Freedom, freedom, freedom. So if this baby is going to make this woman's life less good, okay. And they don't even tell you it's a life. It's a massive sales and so on. So just know that a lot of people that agree with abortion, they don't get it. I remember being in that place, and it wasn't like I was knew it and was like, kill babies. No. It just wasn't even in the mentality at all. That's how warped our society has become. It's a mass of cells. It's not really a human being. What has different DNA, has different number of things. And you know what my mom told me? My mother and father weren't really together. And then at 6 months to the day, when my mom was 6 months pregnant, she told my dad, I'm expecting. And my dad would have wanted her to have an abortion. He was angry because the law in North Carolina was at 6 months you couldn't have an abortion. He was mad. And then now my dad, for all of his oddities, is super pro-life, which is funny because he's not conservative. But he said, I can't imagine my life would be without you, without your sisters. What a terrible mistake I would have made. My mother told me, I was young. I had no life. I was a waitress at the Waffle House. I had no idea what I was doing. Having you gave me meaning. I had no meaning. If I had an abortion, I would just continue waffling through life. But being a mom gave me purpose and meaning. That's how it's been for everyone. How beautiful is that? God takes something sinful and something wrong and turns it into something beautiful. Or he can turn it into more destruction. So how about harder situations? Like, what if someone is raped? What if someone is something terrible happens beyond their will? Right? Even then, yes, we have people in this parish. I won't reveal who they are. People in this parish who are a outcome of that. That's how they were conceived. Is it hard? Yes. Remember, think about it. A life is a life. Baby's born, you go, this isn't convenient. It doesn't matter if it's convenient. It's a life by God, and you take it and you make the best of it because it's a gift from God. You understand? So we have people in the parish who are survived botched abortions. You know them. You know them. Wow. Right? Many, many things. Incest. I know somebody who was a product of incest. You know that. And they're still alive. And they're a beautiful person. Imagine. They like being alive. I like being alive. Right? So it's very, very important for us to... It's always wrong. People always... But what about this? What about that? There's no what if for us Orthodox Christians. None. Right? You know, there's a number of issues. So, kids, go downstairs. We're going to finish up. Okay, guys. Go downstairs. Joe, don't take any crap. Just joking. Here they go. So, now is where it's going to get serious. Are they going? Okay. There's a couple of things that we're kind of in between that I want to fill the gaps in. Talking about... girls, go ahead. Hi, girls. Go ahead. So, talking about sex ed. Right? It's a disaster. It is a disaster. There's no need for it. Like, the sex ed they do in schools will destroy your kids. They will destroy your kids. There's one thing I wanted to read to you from one of the, if I can find it here, about protecting our youth. Oh, if I can find it. But the bottom line is that it was some great statistics, but shocking. It does not help. Everyone had that, your parents gave you the talk. Do you remember that? Right? In some cultures, they don't give you the talk. But some parents, here's the birds and the bees, all those things. That screws kids up more than you think. You think you're giving them tools? You are not. I had some kids tell me recently that their mom gave them that talk. And you know what? It made him cry. It made this boy cry because it scandalized him. He didn't know what to do with it. He was kind of like thrown off and said, I don't want to think about this. Father, I don't want to think about this. Is that okay? I said, yeah, you're not ready. Put it out of your mind. His mom, well-meaning, right? But the world says, give him the tools. You be the one to tell him. You can. My wife's a very pure person. She's wonderful. And did she leave? She's gone? Okay. So, you know, and so she told me that when her parents gave the talk, it caused her more temptations than she ever had before. It planted temptations and planted thoughts And that's, I can't tell you how common that is a disaster. What I've done is I've tracked kids among all the priest families and other families, the kids who have turned out really well and really pure. And I talked to all of them in preparation for this. And I asked, how did your parents talk to you? I talked to the parents, how did you do? Universally, they barely said anything. Now, if your kid's in public school, you get a little more of a tangle there. Right? And that's why it's difficult. And you've got to give them just enough so that, and tell them, ask me questions before you ask your friends. Your friends say something, tell them, ask me first, and I'll give it. Just give them just enough. You'll blow their minds, and you won't remember what it's like to be that age. Because you've known about it for so long, you can really ruin them. Really, in a shocking way. The most pure people that I know, as adults, they all told me this. No one really told me anything. And that's what one great priest said. He says, no one has to teach you how to eat. No one has to teach you how to drink. In the old days, cavemen figured out. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not to be taught. People figure it out. Right? Young people, since time when they're in young married people, they stumble through that whole sexual act, and it's beautiful. And it's normal. That's why it's so important that our kids never see pornography, all these terrible things, and that ideally that the first person they're with is the first only person they're ever going to be with. That's so beautiful because there's no expectations or what this was like. But it's all fresh and new, and it's this beautiful thing. And there's no right or wrong with it. In other words, with you're not comparing. It's so awesome and normal. Very, very beautiful. And then you don't need like the Kama Sutra. You don't need it. Right? They figure it out since time immemorial. God made it that way. They're going to figure it out. Now, if your kids ask you questions, they can ask you questions. You know what's amazing is that my son, Pant Lehman, he's this tall kid. He's 12 years old. He doesn't get it. The other day he asked me, why do I look like you? Because you have nothing to do with it. Yes. He got to be 12 years old and he knows so much less than I knew at 12. God bless him. Right? And my girls, even older, they just kind of like, Papa, I'm just, I have a blessing not to think about that right now. I said, yeah, don't even think about it right now. There's no need. Why flood yourself with that, right? Even young girls, when they get on their period, things like that, you don't have to tell them the whole story. You just tell them, you're going to be a certain age at which you're going to start to happen. What this can happen is potentially, this can eventually give you the potential to be a mama. And you're going to go through it, and here's how you're going to feel, a number of things. You don't have to go beyond that if you don't want to, right? Every family is different. I'm not saying, but I'm saying you can scare your kids. And then they'll come to confession to me and go, whoa, Father, I'm thinking about a lot of things I never thought about before. That's how Father Paul had this conversation recently. He's like, whoa, a few parents have had this talk clearly, and it's blowing their minds. Right? So it's a delicate balance. If you're protecting them in this way, just give them the least amount they need to know. So my son and I are going to have this talk soon. It's going to be a little bit more. Not going to be a lot more because their minds obsess about it, and then they'll be really, really tempted. In the old days, in the village and stuff like that, no one talked about it. No one talked about it. It was protected, things like that. And I know that my kids, thank God, aren't going to be around some other stupid punks that are going to be talking about it all the time. You see the point? It's different. If you raise them in that way. Now, if they're going to be around that, then you've got to be a little more proactive, maybe. And you've got to be a little more careful. Please, please be careful with this. My experience is the less, the better. Right? That sounds funny. The less, the better. Have an openness with them. They can ask questions. Give them just enough. Just enough, and we'll preserve their purity, and they help them through all that. Okay. There's some kids. All right, Sasha, go downstairs now. Just joking. That's my oldest. We have to tell our kids to be pure. You have to tell your kids not to touch themselves. Now, don't bring this up right away, but kids often do, and they said the self-experimentation, nip it in the bud. A lot of parents will say, oh, my son's always got his hands on his pants. He's always scratching his business, blah, blah. Stop it. It's not funny. It's not cute. Tell you, we don't do that. It's inappropriate. Kids go through the stage sometimes, boys, girls, different things. Like sometimes they're experimental with it. You nip it in the bud right away. You don't make them feel like horrible people. You just say, we don't do that. That's not appropriate. It's private parts, as we do, right? You have the talk. Like, if anyone tries to touch you here, you always tell me no matter what. If that person tells you, never tell anybody, doesn't matter, you tell me. That's an important talk to have with all your kids. And really, really important. And then when questions arise, give them a little bit. Give them a little bit at a time. And also, we should talk about what sex is in marriage. In Orthodox marriage, it's a gift. It's a divine consolation, the fathers say. So, but it's not the end-all, be-all of marriage or of the world. The world thinks sex is what the whole thing's about. Right? That's what marriage is about. It's the purpose of life for most people. Sexual pleasure. For Orthodox Christians, it's not at all. Let me ask you this. If there had not been the fall, would there be sexual relations? No. No. The church fathers are clear that sexual relations is a product of the fall. Right? One of the saints says, Adam and Eve could have conceived, but it would have been differently. One saint says, poetry, he says, they could have conceived with one passionless kiss. But after our fall, the Lord knowing us and loving us, always making a way for us, he gave holy marriage and that unity in marriage with the sexual act blessed in marriage as a means of procreation to continue the race. Right? The marriage service is full of this. For the continuation of the race, for the continue to go forth and multiply, to follow the commandment of God. Marital relations is also it's a marital glue. That glues two become one flesh wasn't just in the act. St. John Chrysostom says, the two equaling one flesh, the one flesh is the new baby. Isn't that interesting? Most people don't interpret it. That's the way the fathers interpret it. So it's absolutely it's a divine gift. It's blessed by God, but it's only blessed in the context of marriage. St. Paul says, should I join myself to a prostitute? Who is joining to a prostitute if he does that? What does he say, St. Paul? You're joining Christ to a prostitute because who's in you? Christ. Right? So when you're married in the church, the icon of a married person, a man and woman married in the church, that's an image of Christ in this church. That unity is so beautiful. And we want our young people, most people, I'm telling you adults, most people who are married, most people for their sexual life is lust. And that's not right. It's not right. I'm not saying it shouldn't be pleasurable, but it needs to be love. And most people have no idea what love is. So garner that in your marriage. Right? It's something that it needs to be nourished in marriage. Even that is an act of sacrifice. Right? It's an act of sacrifice. It's not most people, it's a sexual, selfish act. Right? I get my pleasure. I get the terrible way. What other part of marriage is that way? It's sacrifice. And also, if we don't do really sinful things, there's no guilt involved. A lot of people have lots of guilt when it comes to marital relations, all that. There's no need for that. Right? I know people that cover up their... Traditionally, we have our wedding icons or our crowns over our bed. I know couples that tell me they cover them up. I said, what are you doing? God bless you with the marriage. But here's the problem. Inappropriate things. So I tell you, I'm calling catechism. Orthodox Christians, this is ancient. A lot of priests aren't going to tell you this. I'm going to tell you. Orthodox Christians, no oral, no anal sex. We don't do those things. We don't do those things. Why? Because those things are unnatural. And they lead to guilt. And they lead to lots of different things. You know, I had a woman come to me confessing that her husband made her do that. And she said, I feel so demeaned. I feel like an animal. I feel like an animal. And she told her husband that, and he cried and said, I'm so sorry. That was what he was raised with. And all that kind of nonsense from movies and his friends. And disgusting. We've dragged that into our marriage. Right? And so he's saying, no. It matters that your eyes meet with each other. And it's a unity of soul. Yes, it's pleasurable. But God said, you know why it's pleasurable, the fathers say? As a consolation for having children. Because having children is going to be difficult. Or that at least the possibility of children is there. As a consolation to give you strength, the difficulty of bearing children, God made that act pleasurable as a blessing for you. It's beautiful. It's blessed, but it's not the end all. It's a marital glue. Helps us stay together, but it's not any kind of glue if it's one person feels abused, if it has disgustingness to it, if it has a kind of thing. If you keep those things and you just avoid those two things that I mentioned and you make it about love, you know, then it'll always be something very, very beautiful. And it's controlled, right? We're not looking at other people. We're always careful with ourselves. You know, traditionally on the night before communion, so Saturday night, traditionally, Orthodox Christians abstain from marital relations. Why? Because it's a sin? No, it's never a sin. The marriage bed's undefiled. Just like eating is never a sin. But we fast. Why? St. Paul talks about this. A mutual fast. Why? To focus on God. And then we come together again. So traditional families who are Orthodox Christian couples who are older and can handle it, they fast maritally for the whole fast, the great fast. So when they come back together, they really appreciate each other. Some people will fast on Wednesdays and Fridays, the night before communion, things like that. These aren't hard and fast rules. With young couples, I'm less strict about those things because it's important for them to learn all these things. But they grow towards that. It's not obsessive. It's not the main purpose of marriage. It's a beautiful thing. You know what happens over time when you nurture this in a family, in love? My wife and I have the best marriage that I know. I'm so in love with my wife, not in a cheesy way. I'm bald, right? I'm fatter. I mean, all these things, you know, she had 9 children, all these things. And I find her so much more attractive and beautiful than I ever did at the beginning. And that's, I don't mean that in a worldly way. I don't mean it's in a spiritual way. Like, that's part of it. She's such an impressive person. We've suffered together. She's so incredible. But I'm saying it's even reflected itself in a physical attraction. That's really pretty incredible. And a lot of relationships, it goes the other way. It goes down. They seek outside. It can go. It can be a beautiful thing, but it requires sacrifice. It's a spiritual thing. And a lot of people, it's like living a spiritual life, and then there's the stuff they do in the bedroom they feel guilty about, and it's this weird part of their heart. God wants all of your heart. He wants all of it. And so it's very, very important. So you guys need to know this as adults. And you know what? Your kids probably have, hopefully never have an idea about what happens with you in this realm. But spiritually, it goes down. I'll tell you, as a spiritual father, parents who have self-control sexually in their own struggles individually, and they have this, and they've nurtured this in their marriage, they have kids who are pure. And they do well. Parents who have neuroses or addictions and all these kind of things, or inappropriate things that can happen in their marriage, almost invariably when their kids come to confession, they struggle with those things. Big time. So, it's important for us. Is this helpful? Yeah, it's pin drop. Okay, I get it. It's an uncomfortable topic, I guess. But I want to talk to having kids. Have as many kids as God gives you. That's the rule. That's the Orthodox canona, the canons of the church. It's a measure. It's the standard. Right? The Holy Fathers say, abortion's evil. Do we all agree abortion's evil? You know what one of the saints says? The evil sister of abortion is contraception. Oh, how could you say that? Well, contraception is to make sure abortions don't happen, Father. That's like the normal... No, not at all. Not at all, actually. So how is that the case? So with the rise of contraception, which, by the way, is a very... There's always been evil, sick people who find a way not to have kids in a poor way. But in majority of people, they wanted to have kids. The idea of not wanting to have as many kids is crazy. When I went to Serbia and I said, how many kids do you have? 7 kids? Oh, Father, you're such a rich man. Here in America, people go, that's child abuse. There's overpopulation, blah, blah. Every poor country, Eastern Europe, Romania, Bulgaria, they go, you're a rich man, Father. You're a rich man. They get it. They would never, the idea of not wanting kids to them is like insane. Right? It's so worldly. So what it does is, what contraception does is it disconnects the normal consequences of a married life. Right? So, like I said, you're blessed in marriage. You're blessed to have this beautiful relationship. Two souls become one. The bodies become one. It's pleasurable. It's beautiful. And the natural blessing and the consequence of that act is a child, which is a gift of God. It's very beautiful the way God made it. And so what the contraception does is it shatters that unity. And now it removes the natural consequence, but blessed consequence, even if it's not convenient to the person, by their own standards, that blessed consequence removes that, and now it just isolates the act in and of itself. And the father's in and of itself, and it's just a dead act. Just a dead act of selfish pleasure. Getting off, so to speak, forgive my language. And it's lost all that beauty. Now, it's not a big deal for the world, because they never had it in that realm of beauty anyway. But we do. We do. And it's very important for us that doesn't happen. So, the fathers, without a doubt, say that two become one flesh. Simply, we always want to do everything to receive the grace of God. There's a pattern in everything we're doing is, want to figure the will of God. Should I be married? We've been asked it. What's the will of God? What kind of job should I have? What's the will of God? You know what? Like, we're trying to find that and then live according to it. And then the scriptures and all the same 2,000 years say, the will of God if you're married. And the blessing, in fact, that the command is to multiply and to trust God with all your heart. And so many people go, nope, I'll do it on my own terms. I'm going to control my life. What a recipe for disaster. It's a recipe for huge disaster. We have to trust him. And is it going to hamper things? You know, maybe. But again, in the old country, they don't have a pot to in, my grandfather would say. They're poor as beans, and they have as many kids as they can. They see him as a gift, more important. And you know what? They did it in times of much more medical risk. Right? Tons of, you read the lives of the saints, tons of them died. Their sisters died, brothers died in infancy. It hardly ever happens now, thank God. Very, very rarely. And much more poverty than we ever had. Right? Children were the greatest blessing. They were true wealth. People often say, well, Father, I can't have a baby because I can't amass wealth. That's your true wealth. And you're sacrificing real wealth for this. We're not in control. Let me repeat that. We are not in control anymore. We're control freaks. God, my life is yours. Whatever you want. As long as Johnny gets into Stanford, and this happens like this, and this happens like this, and if you don't, what kind of God are you? And blah, 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 and God doesn't love me. People operate that way, but the saints operated differently and said, God, I'm just going to live the way you want me to live in an old-fashioned way, and whatever you give me, I know you're going to give me strength to bear it, even if it's hard. You know what's hard? We just buried a baby, right? Marilla's baby. It was stunningly beautiful. Buried her behind the new church. You think that wasn't hard for her? You know why they have a kid? Because they heard me talking. They've confessed to me for years, and they have older boys, and they said, we have to follow the command of God. And they did it. And they said, we never would have changed a thing, even though it's painful and difficult, and the baby was only 2 hours alive. So what a gift, Father. Thank you. Thank you for making sure we had that gift. Wow. That's a Christian. And they're richer because of the experience, although it was more painful. Right? That's a different way to think. We have to be careful. Many people would say, well, if I knew that was going to happen, I wouldn't have done it. That would not be a Christian. You'd be bucking the will of God. God could have saved that child, but God chose to take her, and He blessed. He said, I'm so rich, Father. What a blessing from God she was to me for 2 hours only. Awesome. Take Heather and Jeremy, right? They got a bazillion kids, like us, right? Is it convenient? No. Half her doctor said, her doctors told her like 4 or 5 babies ago, you're going to die if you have any more. Well, they've been wrong like every time. People mock them and say, "Or you know, people are." I'm really saddened sometimes people's reaction to me having lots of kids or people with the kids, and they say like, they're hard of birth control. I heard someone say in the church, and I was just like, excuse me? Because they trust God, and you're actually a control freak and don't trust God? Shut up. Hey, you're losing. You're losing big blessings. And there, you know what? Maybe they have less money. Maybe they struggle. There's going to be jewels in the crown of Heather when she meets the judgment seat of Christ. Jewels. Because she gave life. You know, I know Father Josiah, and he has lots of kids. He has 10 kids. And someone came up to him, an Orthodox person, who should know better, came up and said, Father, have you ever heard of birth control? He goes, I'll answer your question in a minute. And the person came over, and all these kids went, interested in kids. He goes, now which one do you want to get rid of? Which one do you think? And the guy was like, oh. And he's like, yeah, shut up. Like, he was pretty tough, right? And the person was a clergyman, even. God forgive him, you know. And so he taught him a lesson that day that, can you have too many flowers in a garden? What are our priorities? How are we living our life? Either God's in control and we love him, or we're not, and then we're in big, big trouble. Right? So we have to trust him. And not to trust him is a sin. And the canons of the church, by the way, reflect this. So if a couple, whatever means, doesn't do this, then they're actually excommunicated and barred from communion in the Orthodox Church. How many of you knew that? Right? None of them. Right? So is it applied all the time? No. A lot of things aren't applied because people have no idea. They don't even think about these things in many ways. And that means by any means. Any means. So, like, for instance, what are the ways people do it? By the pill. By the way, ladies, the pill is terrible for you. Right? I talked to a doctor friend of mine, and she said that the pill was so common, like, not so much my generation, part of my generation, the generation before, right? Was it does ravages in your body, increased chances for multiple cancers, a number of other things, and doctors try to put you on it for anything. Right? Remember that one time, like, you were having some, like, stuff after one of the births, and the doctor was like, here, take this, and you kind of asked him, what is that? Well, it's kind of form of birth control to regulate your cycle. And she's like, well, I don't want that. Like, I don't want that. Right? Because first of all, it's blocking the grace of God, but a lot of birth control is, do you know this? Most birth controls are a form of, they're abortive agents, right? So when it implants itself in the uterine wall, it kills it and makes sure it can't implant. Or doesn't allow it in the first place, which the Holy Fathers say is, you're blocking the grace of God. Right? So at worst, it's abortive. At best, you want the pleasure of the act God gave without the consequence and the blessing. Who would want that? In every other part of your life, you wouldn't allow that. So the pill, you know, prophylaxis like condoms, things like that. IUD, right? Intrauterine device. All these things are, again, you know, the snip snip, right? What's the real word for that? I was doing my notes. I couldn't think of the real word. Vasectomy, right? There's hysterectomy and vasectomy. I actually wrote snip snip right here. But you know what? Many an Orthodox man has gone to an elder and said, did this, and the elder said, you need to go back and take care of it. And they did, and they had more children, actually. And oh, it's so hard, it's so this, it's so that. And not every case to make them do it, but they have to repent over it. Because you've robbed yourself of a blessing for the sake of pleasure, for the sake of this. And you can make lots of good reasons, but bottom line is you said, God made a mistake, and I need to fix it. So that I can live a certain life, the consequences and the outcome is such that I want it to be. Certain kind of consequence. So, same for a woman. I mean, most women have a hysterectomy to avoid that. It's much more difficult. But I know women that if the doctors offered hysterectomies after a hard labor, and the woman said, no, I want a potential to have a child next. Well, it could be hard. And then without thinking, if they get it done, they regret it later. Or later they didn't get it, and they're so thankful, and they have more children. So, we have to think about these kind of choices. The only possibility is what? Abstinence. Abstinence, the Holy Fathers say. But even that has a danger because, you know, there are some Orthodox saints who live as brother and sister. That's very rare. It's a very high calling, and it's very rare, and it's a blessing from a spiritual father, but it's not the norm. And in fact, if people go with the wrong mentality, it ruins their marriage, and their passions go, and it causes major problems in their marriage. But by abstinence, I mean, like, the bottom line, if you fast the certain seasons of the year, we fast as Orthodox Christians more than half the year. And if a person wanted to be pious and wanted to attempt, okay, they would say, we're not going to have relations in those days. This isn't required, but for communion, okay, but you could strive for that. It's not a hard and fast rule. If they did that, it would be half the year, and that would be kind of a natural kind of birth control, and to a certain extent. And if God wants you to have a baby, you have a baby, right? And we want what God wants for us. Here's what it exposes. Do I really want God's will in my life? That could be fearful, right? Do I really want what He wants? We say, yes, I do, for sure. Oh, maybe I don't, right? And that's the way we're different than the old-timers. We want the grace of God all the time. We know that He's going to take care of us. But the Holy Father said, to be clear, some people, they track their cycle. The rhythm method, women say, track my cycle, and I know this is the day I'm going to ovulate, and we're not going to come together on that day. Now, a spiritual father, like, for instance, I've blessed that in certain circumstances, because there's this level of asceticism that they're trying to do, and they're not just trying to be cheap about it, they want to maintain their marriage, they're offering some kind of abstinence and asceticism, and I've blessed that in certain situations. But even that is economy, and not a long-term solution. Because there's still the same problem of what there? Tell me. What's the problem there? Yeah, they don't want them. They're controlling things. They don't want the natural outcome of this beautiful act. They want the beautiful act without the outcome of it. That's still a problem ultimately, right? Now, as a spiritual father, there are exceptions. So there is exceptions, but they're making the rule. But in general, not many exceptions, right? So, for instance, I've had some medical ones, but even those, and I had a lady who one time who literally was for a short term was mentally ill, like psychotically ill. But the doctor said, she shouldn't really be being with you right now anyway. I don't even know what she's going to do. Right? But my point is, I've given people short-term kind of blessings to, like, just make it through hard times. Always with the understanding that this is an aberration. This is a temporary blessing so we can move forward. Does that make sense? So very, very important. You will regret it. The biggest regret I hear in men and women between the ages of 50 and 80, and I hear lots of confessions, is tears. I should have had more children, Father. I was so selfish. I had my whole life planned out. I didn't want it. You were so overwhelmed with the kids, and now they're all out of the house. And I realized, so selfish. That's a terrible feeling you can't change. You don't want that. I don't think I'm ever going to have that feeling, personally. I'm never going to be alone. We're never going to be alone. It's a beautiful thing. And really, really important. So take it to heart. If it applies to you, pray about it. Talk to your spouse. If it scares you, good. It should. It's a fearful thing to be in the hands of the living God. Do we trust Him to take care of us or not? If we don't, we won't make it. If we do, we'll shine like the stars of heaven. So please, you know, really, really important. And look at the saints, right here, closest to the altar, Joachim and Anna. Do you see? They wanted kids. They wanted them, right? You say, well, I'm too old to have kids. They were old. And they, unlike the Catholic Church, this wasn't an immaculate conception. They had normal physical relations. The blessing was that she was past childbearing years. Zechariah and Elizabeth, the same exact way. There's many examples. So people say, oh, I'm too old, and the other things like that. Like, who were you to decide that? Right? David and Stephanie, you could have decided that. How old's your oldest, Stephanie? 23. You could have very easily been done, and you probably did have that before you were Orthodox, but we're done. Right? But then you heard it, and you had humility, and you did it, and look at the gift. We're going to baptize this. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. You'll never have regrets from that. We're going to baptize Nicoletta tomorrow. It's so beautiful. And this is why I want that. People have joy. And even Marella, who had this heartbreak of losing this child, she still was blessed. She still was blessed by this. So don't rob yourself of the blessings of God. The church has these standards, not because it wants to make you miserable and give you rules. Opposite. It wants to give you life and life abundantly and wants you not to miss any blessings. So either God loves you and He's going to take care of you, or He doesn't and we're in deep trouble. We believe that, obviously. So do all Orthodox people agree with what I just said? What do you think? Well, okay, I'm going to answer that question. Why? Forgive me, because a lot of them are secular. And a lot of them are not. The only stability we have as Orthodox Christians are the Gospels, the canons of the Church, the saints, the Holy Fathers, this foundation. And that's what we build on. Everything I'm telling you is every generation, every Orthodox, this is the standard. Now, unfortunately, people can say, they can change, they can change the mentality. I don't know how, to be totally frank with you. Right? As I told you, as a spiritual father, I can make exceptions in certain situations. That's normal. right? It's not like hard and fast. It's all helping people, like fasting, right? Here's the fasting rules. When someone's sick, you adjust it to help them, right? Does that make sense? So it's like this too, but just to throw it out and to say, oh no, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. No, that's secularism. And they're trying to control God. So forgive me. I would stand by it any day, toe to toe with anyone who would disagree with me. And I'm sure I'd have people. Because it's the truth. And the exception can't become the rule. So don't doubt anything I'm telling you. I have not. This isn't just Father Justin's opinion, by the way. Every great priest, the greatest priest people I know, they have this going. So last thing, it's important. Fertility treatments. It's super hard when a woman wants to have babies and can't. Right? We don't know what that's like. My wife was like 6 months. We didn't have children. She wasn't pregnant. She's like, maybe I'm barren. Nope. But I've known people that for 10 years prayed, and they had a baby for 10 years. And then some people never were able to. I know a clergyman, he's a deacon. His wife weren't blessed to have children. And they've accepted it by the grace of God. And they've become the parents of everyone. They have a beautiful ministry in the church. And they've disconnected themselves from that worry. But it's very, very important. How we approach this issue. So if a family wants to have children, the first thing they do is pray. And they live the life in God. And if they are struggling and they can't conceive, first thing they do is repent deeper. I thought the many spiritual fathers said, there's a couple who came to me, they couldn't have children. I said, go deeper in confession. Right? I know somebody that they found out it was the secret drug addiction. And the spiritual father said, there's no way God is going to send a child to you when your husband has this addiction. And once he hung it up, right, that the drug addiction, then they conceived. Right, a secret sin. So the first thing we do is really confess. Maybe they weren't married in the church, whatever was going on, all these different things. You totally get it out, repent, God sends blessings. We had a couple, they tried for years. They wanted their marriage in the church after their baptism, but they wanted it always in the same day. And it wasn't going to work out. And they put it off. And finally they said, just do it. And they did the marriage service, and she conceived in the next 2 weeks. Hadn't for years, so they need the grace of God. This has happened. Then if it can't go, we ask for more prayers from the priests, right? We have this belt of the Panagia, blessing the Mother of God. They wear around them. They pray. We have a number of things for families that want to conceive. We go and venerate the holy relics. We go to St. John Maximovich. We go on pilgrimage. Ask Michael Zervos with his two boys, his wife of blessed memory. She couldn't conceive. Went to the relics of St. Nectarios. She conceived. They had their boy Nectarios. Was told to never get pregnant again. Went again to St. Nectarios. She's pregnant with George. You see, it happens all the time. Relics of the saints. We pray. We make pilgrimages. It's Mount Athos. I went to Mount Agia Anna, St. Anna, the Mother of God. The Mother of God. There's pictures of babies everywhere on this icon. And I went, wow, this is so many. They go, Father, this is just in the past week or two. We replaced them every week or two. New pictures of people that pray. And they have the relic of St. Anna there. And they pray. These monks pray for people to have children all the time by the grace of God. And then practical things. Be healthy. Take care of yourself. Do those number of things. Okay. And then ultimately we accept the will of God. This is the norm. That's a constant theme, by the way. Accept the will of God. It's a constant kind of thing. I want to read two quotes from this book that I think are amazing. It says this. It says, many contraceptive methods as well as abortion lead to infertility. People don't know that, actually. As does postponing pregnancy until later in childbearing years. Women are the peak of their fertility in their 20s. After which fertility begins to decline and overall risk of infertility increases. So if you start having children young, teach our kids that, and it decreases the risk. In the same society that spends hundreds of millions of dollars annually to kill unwanted babies through abortion, there is equal or perhaps more money being spent on creating babies with intense medical intervention. Right? There's a big question of how much we start messing with that, with doctors and things like that. So the church allows minimal interventions once they've done all the spiritual things. Like, for instance, a lady might have endometriosis, might have some cysts or something like that, and they have surgery to get that done to see if it helps conceive. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with saying they don't want to do that either and just trust God. They want to try, they want to sacrifice. So then I know a priest who wants to have children, and his wife, she has a special medication that releases the hormone such that she knows exactly the time at which she can see. Ovulates, and then they know exactly when to try more than ever. That's still not sinful, right? And they know, right? So there's different things like that, different fertility drugs that might help someone be more fertile, things like that. Those are okay. Not as important as the spiritual thing, but they're okay. It becomes sketchy when things become artificial. Does that make sense? So assisted reproduction. You know, when you have a middleman, all of a sudden in the middle of this blessed act, right? So for instance, you know IVF is, right? In vitro fertilization. This is generally not blessed by the church. Why do you think? Well, there's a number of issues. How do you extract the specimen? Through a sinful means, right? Here's this porn video and go masturbate, right? A lot of people, some people were like, what's the big deal with that? But the fact you have to ask that means that we have a bigger problem here, right? That's a sinful thing, right? Now, you know, and so we would avoid that in general. We would avoid that in general. Now, in certain, I've seen people, and I've seen blessings be given by some people for a situation where they want to see who the problem lies with. Is it with the woman or the man? And they have to do something like that. And there's a different way they can extract the semen, by the way. There's a different way. Anyway, it's a different way. I found out. I don't know personally. They told me. The doctor, I have a friend who's a doctor and a priest, and he told me there's a different way. They can do something where they can make it come out otherwise, and in a different way. Anyway, and so you would want that in a situation. Hopefully it doesn't even get to that. My point is, Orthodox Christians are sensitive even to these things, and you would find out. But the place where, when there's a middleman, when that act, then we would get worried. And the problem with IVF, in vitro fertilization, what does it do? Who knows the problem? Because it creates a lot of them. And that's the problem. So there's an artificial kind of semen, and there's a natural insemination, which is they take the egg, they take the semen, and then they kind of join it together. And there's a middleman there, and there's the act of taking the semen, but that's not as bad as when they create this IVF. What happens is you have lots of embryos that get fertilized, and here's the problem. Half the time they keep them, or they create so many. Let's say you have 5, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Well, only, by the way, that's why there's so many twins in Utah. Twins, triplets. You ever notice that? It's not like natural. It's because you have the highest use of IVF and those kind of things. Why? Why here in Utah, you think? Biggest pressure. Have big families. Do all these kind of things. Orthodox have big families too, but not by these artificial means, right? So what happens is you might get multiple ones that get, but guess what? You have some that don't. And what are you doing to them?
Frozen.
Or they're killed. Or they're just disposed of. They're frozen. What is that? What kind of life? That's a bioethical question. Like, we don't let life float around in a freezer. Nor do we let it die. So generally speaking, the Holy Fathers and the saints and the bishops of the church say, and the moderns that say, that this is not something that's blessed in the church. So like anything else, you talk to your spiritual father, you work through those. You've seen some of those things I just mentioned as possibilities. You know, we don't get, I recommend fetal genetic testing. You have to be careful with that. Why do doctors nowadays do genetic testing? To abort the babies. Not because they want to give you extra information about the baby. For sure not. Now, Orthodox people say you can get it, but be really clear about why you're doing it. Maybe you're more prepared for a struggle or something like that. Okay. But do you know why they say in Scandinavia, Netherlands, and Amsterdam, they said, we've eradicated Down syndrome. How do they do that? Not a single one was born. They 100% were aborted. That is so sick. Who, Bishop Basil, or Bishop says, whose feet are we going to wash if everyone's perfect? Whose feet are we going to... These kids are gifts when they're born with these problems. You ever met kids like Down syndrome, whatever they are? You know how many 99% Down syndrome kids, genetic testing, are aborted now? Do you know that in America, even? Sick. And they're gifts from God. And if you know them, they bless your life. Who are we to make a standard of what life should be or what shouldn't be? It's that same control. Control. I want my kid to look like this, my life to look like this, my fans to look like this. Right? Very, very dangerous. So we're very, very careful. No genetic test unless you have to just know. It's very, very dangerous. We wouldn't change anything. Obviously, we don't do the egg donation thing. We don't do the surrogacy thing. It's insanity. Just to know that. People do that stuff. And it's foreign to the life of a Christian. We would just say, you know what? This is what this elder says. He says this. Our purpose in life is not marriage, not monasticism, nor anything else. Just like the purpose of marriage is not merely procreation. Listen to this, moms and those who can't have kids, listen to this. The purpose of life is the eternal relationship with God. This is the first thing to look for. If one succeeds in finding it, then he or she is fulfilled. The same happens in marriage. If you fulfill the purpose of marriage and for one reason or another you can't have children, that does not mean that you have to end your marriage or you failed at marriage or anything like that. Yes, I know it's a trauma. That does not mean that if we do not give birth to children, our marriage will not work well. The purpose of marriage is different. The purpose of our life is something different, and we are to be patient. We wait, we try, we do not worry. We then discover the true value of our life. If you do not learn to discover the purpose of your life, the meaning of your existence, and you think the meaning of your life is marriage, or a specific man, or a certain girl, or a monastery, or children, or your studies, or whatever, it means that you reduce the meaning of your life. And they can idle out of something that is not absolute but relative and can be taken from you. So this is going to become ruined at some point anyway. Whether it's called marriage or our studies or our health, something can happen with us. We get sick and we can no longer move forward in our studies and we're a failure. If we do not understand what our purpose is and we do absolutize these relative things, then, my children, there's a danger that we'll collapse. Like the one who stands on stilts. At some point they will break and he or she will fall down. You cannot make an idol out of your life in the monastery or in marriage. No idol of your marriage, your children, your husband, your job, your money, your knowledge, not things. We have to be above them so we can have peace in our lives. Wow, awesome. That's Mr. Paul Athanasius, one of the holiest men alive, who I took a lot of my talk today, by the way, from. He's a bishop in Cyprus. He's a disciple of St. Paisius. Holy monk and a great lover of marriage as well. So, sorry I took so long today. I know it was long, but I wanted to cover, eventually it was the last class before next week's going to be a wrap-up. So we have like 4 minutes, if you want to do it. For a question, we don't have to. Do you have any questions? No? That was long, forgive me. Yes?
Okay, so I never married. I never wanted to. My mother always, she was a grandmother, and I said, I'm not going to sleep around, just making a grandma. It didn't happen. So is it wrong for me to borrow everybody else's kids?
Absolutely not. It's totally beautiful.
Am I everybody else's kids, Father? I mean, you do.
Good. Me, personally, yes. Yes, I understand. You know, this is so beautiful. It was so common. Do you remember? Like, it was so common. Like, I feel like every family I knew had an aunt, right? So my great-grandmother had her sister who took care of her, who never got married. I had an Aunt Helen, never got married. But she, in other words, wasn't a monastery, but they just lived a faithful, pure life, and they became kind of everyone's parents. You know what I'm saying? It's a very beautiful, normal thing, which has become less and less so because people don't honor chastity anymore. There's so much weird pressure. So absolutely not, my dear. This is your calling from God. God gave you this calling. You accept it as the will of God, and that's what gives our life meaning and purpose. Yeah.
When you were talking about how mature marriage is more important than being old when you get married.
Right.
Out of curiosity, do we have any idea how old Mary was when she conceived Christ?
Uh-huh. And so, two answers to that question. One is, the fathers said, we do know that age. Two, we don't necessarily want to compare that because her conception was so different, right, to be with child. But it was not a scandal for her to be pregnant at the age she was pregnant at. The fathers said between the ages of 12 and 14, right? And again, if life expectancy is 40, you know, we have an Orthodox mission in Haiti. I know the priest in Haiti. Life expectancy is 39 for a man. 39. I imagine that some places in Africa too, right? Young, 40. Right, we take it for granted, right? So we think we're going to live forever, so we postpone our joy, postpone our life, right? So, but life knows that you're the most fertile when people are young, women are young, and you can have. How could you have many children if you start very, very late and things like that? So, yeah. In the old country, you knew people in the old country in the old days, they knew by the age of 15, 16 that they were going to either in a monastery or they were married. My girls just got back from the monastery; they were there for a month. I think they'll go back. You know, it's weird. I love them. I can't imagine having them around. But you know what? They feel fulfilled. And the abbess said it's very common for them to go in the old days, 15, 16, 17, 18, whenever they're called. And in fact, in Greece, they have a rule that sometimes not over 25 or not over 30, they're not allowed to go because after that, it's too hard to change. Right? It's kind of like when you wait to get married. When old people get married, it's rough. I did a marriage with people in their 60s once, and it was like, you know, like if you think you're attached to the way you put your toothbrush when you're 18, man, when you're 60 and you're setting it, whoa, dog and cat fights and wow, right? When you're married at 18 or 20 or 23, whatever, you haven't had that much time to settle into your routine so you can shatter it for the sake of the other and humble yourself. But you have years and years, it's much more difficult and much more set in your ways. So, yeah, so the bottom line is that things have changed. You know, I would be rare, I necessarily had a problem. Like, Joe, your daughter was 17, went to the monastery, was baptized pretty recently, that's pretty rare. Perfect. She's made for that place. Made for it, hand to glove, perfect. It's like the most beautiful thing when I hear about her smile there and say, she's happy. And when I see Sister Miriam at the monastery, I go, man, she's happy, happier than most 27-year-olds I know. you know, and it's very, very beautiful. And so that can happen earlier, I think. I think it's harder and harder to find good men nowadays for women to marry and vice versa. So maybe it takes a little longer and to get the right education and to get the right training for a husband. I think that's the biggest thing for marriage, is to get guys who can be hardworking and worth marrying, right? And the age gap used to be different too. Do you notice that? In the old days, traditionally, not always, but often the guy was older than the gal, for the practical reason that he was a little older and he had ability to take care of them, and then she was also young and she had more years to bear children, right? Right, George? Right? George's Cretan father was a little older than his mom, right? How many years older, George? 25, right? My godfather, who's a priest, Father David's 80 now? 80 something. And Betsy is maybe 20 years younger, 25 years younger, right? So that's not the norm by any means. And so my point is simply, those things seem to matter a little bit less in the Orthodox tradition. So the question is readiness, not the age. Any other question? Yeah. Yeah.
So-and-so laid with somebody and went into that family.
Yeah, and you got it.
Yeah. About that, but I just...
So you heard the question, right? So-and-so laid with so-and-so, right? Or even with Noah, right? There's a weird thing that happens there, right? And the father said his son went and uncovered him, right? In an inappropriate manner, right? So there's weird, inappropriate things, which shows human sin. Right, so I think you can show that, but I think that's why I like reading the King James and the New King James. It's not explicit, it's beautiful. So-and-so knew so-and-so. So-and-so laid with so-and-so. And what that means is, so if they're married, you say, oh, they just did things that married people do. They did inappropriate things that should only be done in marriage. Keep it like that. You know, and kids might think, oh, it's just kissy, huggy. You know, you keep it on that level. But they know, like, well, that's only appropriate with my dad, right? So when people see nowadays, people that aren't married, hugging and kissing, they can kind of get the point, but it doesn't go deeper than that. Does that make sense? That's usually what I've done. And my kids have asked me those questions, and different kids in confession ask me questions. What does this mean? And again, you give them just enough information so that they're not going to go ask someone else. They're satisfied in some way, but they're not tempted and like miss the point, right? You're reading the Bible, and you hear a lesson about morality, and you end up tempted by lust or something, right? So, yes. But I think the fact you've been thinking about it and you're aware of it and things like that. Yeah.
What about affection and courtship? What's appropriate? Like what's the
kind? I mean, affection and courtship, it's different. You know what I mean? It's, there's no hard and fast rule, but obviously there's certain things. I'll tell you what I tell people practically. We're speaking real practically now. Is keep it real simple. Maybe in other words, keep it really minimal until you're engaged. For the very reason that if you break it off, it's not traumatic, right? So if you're with this person, so-and-so, but then when it's a seriousness and you're talking about getting married and you're married, then I think, okay, holding someone's hand, fine. Because that's electric. I remember the first time I held my wife's hand. I remember that first time. Bzz, right? It's something, our society, it's something powerful. It's just so beautiful because the world is so crass and beyond that these little things have no more value, but that's powerful, right? And that means something. And then, like, just, you know, being together, but, you know, I set standards, because otherwise you fall into sin real easy. The church does not believe in long engagements. I didn't mention that. Long engagements are a universal no-no. Why? Because it doesn't want you to fall into sin. Because it wants you to be, okay, I got to get to know him more. Now, that process should have happened in courtship. Once you started getting married, there should be no artificial reason. Is he away at war or something in the old days? That would be the only reason, right? Otherwise, you jump in and you make it work. You struggle, right? So, but on the way, I generally tell people no more than just a little kissy kiss, because once people start making out, whew, things go downhill pretty quickly, right? Making out, heavy petting, and next thing you know, people come to me sobbing, "Father, we blew it, we ruined it. Oh my gosh!" And that is so terrible. It's terrible, and it's God's forgiving, but it sullies that beautiful thing they wanted to give to each other. So that's generally what I tell them. Hold hands, a little peck in the cheek here and there. Don't be alone, hanging out in rooms together. Get the door open. Basic things. And then they always appreciate it later. You know? So, good question. Questions? No? Well, thanks for staying so long. I know it was long, but I think it's a really important topic. Wouldn't you agree? a number of important topics that are coming up, and we'll have more. So next week, of all the sessions we've had, please, we want to have you email us the questions. Bless you. Email us the questions this week. So before Friday, email any of your questions about any of the sessions so we have time to prepare an answer, so we can give it to you in a timely way. But if we're just kind of ripping them off the top of our heads, then it could take forever and we can't answer them in the way we'd like to answer them. Does that make sense? So I hope this was helpful. Hope it was helpful for everybody. Please get this book. Everybody, get this book. And I can't emphasize enough that if we live this way, I know it seems old-fashioned. Gosh, I know so many of these things I've said tonight seem like crazy to some people. But I can tell you that I've built my whole life around these ways, and I feel so thankful. I'm not saying, look at me, no, not at all. I'm such an idiot. But I'm saying, I've just said in my life, God, I'm going to live the way you've always had people live, and Christians live, and priests live, and whatever you want. And I feel like, gosh, I'm so much more blessed than if I tried to figure it out. And I live it out in my own life to be an example to you that it's possible. And as it's possible, it's glorious and it's blessed. And many of our own parishioners do. So, and the outcome will be really beautiful. And whatever's coming our way, your kids will make it. Because it's going to be harder to do this in 10, 20 years for our kids than it is for us now. Much harder. So they have to be like this and have this holiness, and they can shine like the saints. Please forgive me. Let's say a prayer.
Yes, truly be the blessing of Theotokos, the blessed and all blameless, and the mother of our God, more honorable than the cherubim, more glorious than the compared than the seraphim. Thou without corruption bearest God the Word, and art truly Theotokos, and magnify thee. May God have compassion upon us and bless us, and make his face to shine upon us and merciful unto us. Amen. Amen.
I hope the fruit of this is good. Someone told me, Father, I hated you for years until my daughter kept her purity and she got married, and now I have grandkids, so thank you for not messing the kids up. So if you hate me a little bit, I get it. But it's because I want to see blessings in your life and your kids' lives. Forgive me. See you tomorrow. Tomorrow we start early. 8:45 Orthros. We're going to baptize the baby. So 8:45 Orthros. 9:30 we're going to enroll catechumens. A beautiful new family of catechumens tomorrow. It's exciting. And then 9:30 or 9:40. And then 9:45 liturgy.